Welcome to the Rad Phone Zone with Aaron, Ethan, and Shay. Take two, I guess. We just fucked everything up, and it's all Ethan's fault.
So you're sorry. No. I'm not. I would be lying if I said I was sorry.
Oh, well, you should lie. I lie.
Okay, then I'm sorry.
I lie all the time when I say, like, oh, that's a good choice, Shay.
I beg forgiveness. And
there you go.
I apologize if this has ruined anyone's evening.
Yeah, then you ruined my evening, and it's my show. Yeah, fuck the structure that we've been using in the past. I said it last time. I'm saying it this time again. It just seems really, you know, it's fake and it's annoying.
Surprising to us. Right?
Well, yeah, I know. That was actually kind of funny. I actually, you know, you didn't say anything, and so since we lost all the audio, I could actually still watch it. That'd be cool. You're probably recording over it right now, aren't you? You bastard. But, yeah.
No, actually, we're not.
If you've... If you're watching the show, chances are you've watched it before. You know what our structure is. We talk about geek shit. And before we talk about normal geek shit, we talk about weekly geek shit in a segment we call Geekly Happenings. We don't talk about anything relevant to the news, like anything about world hunger or anything. We just talk about, you know... The world is hungry.
What's the next topic?
Yeah, that's not news. The world fucking sucks. How is that news? But
car wreck somewhere.
Yeah, who fucking cares? Somebody's dead, somebody's starving, and somebody's pissed at somebody for who they worship. But fuck all that. Larry King is retiring.
That's important stuff.
I don't know about important, but that's what I want to talk about. All this other stuff, it just, you know, gives me the, you know, just bums me the fuck out.
You were saying earlier that apparently Ryan Seacrest is his suggestion.
That is his suggestion. I mean, it would be like, you know, me suggesting myself. You know, they're going to do whatever the fuck they want. He's walking away. You know, obviously, I think Larry King might actually have more of a say.
How long has he been on the air now?
Since 1985, so that's, what, 26 years?
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of crap.
25 years.
You know, 25 years. It'll be 26 by the time he retires, I guess, which is coming this fall.
I would hope that he knows his audience very well and know what kind of personality would stand in his place.
I don't know. I mean, Larry King's here. As far as I'm concerned, he's irreplaceable. So they just need to find something unique. I think.
Stop Larry King Live.
I read about this in the newspaper this morning, and I actually heard on my way to work on the radio. Some people are actually talking shit on Larry King, saying that he's like the most ineffectual interview ever, and saying that, you know, he never asked any of the hard questions or anything like that. And you know what? You know,
he's been on the air for 26 years.
He's been on the air for 26 years. You know, nationally syndicated on CNN. This motherfucker's working out of Kansas City and is an idiot. So, maybe Larry King knows what he's doing more than you fucktard. But, yeah, I like him. I've always liked him. It's like Barbara Walters. Obviously, she's not going to ask if Bill Clinton inhaled or anything like that. But, you know, it's a fun interview.
Yeah.
Shut up, dog! Okay, sorry, guys.
Yeah, Larry King's more...
Now that our listeners are deaf.
Yeah. Okay, what about Larry King?
Well, wasn't it more of an entertainmently aligned
show? It was actually topically... It was topically, because, you know, a lot of...
guests and all that?
Well, I mean, it would be like, you know...
I never watched TV, so...
You know, fucking, like when Gene Siskel died, they automatically had Roger Ebert on that night. You know, it was topical to the news. And, yeah, a lot of the stuff was entertainment. But he talked to, you know, tons of people other than entertainers. Well, I mean, he talked to politicians
everything.
Really
easy to get
and the other thing is, it was live.
Like yeah, it was live.
I mean, that was part of the gimmick. So.
Yeah, Larry King
I never really watched Larry King, so.
I have, and I like him. And he's a weirdo.
Snippets of it.
Yeah, I mean, he's an American icon. Obviously I don't live worldwide. But worldwide-wise, I would imagine he is, too. I mean, they're always... You know, making fun of him in movies. Hell, they made fun of him in Iron Man 2 with Stan Lee being him and a drunk Tony Stark thinking it was Larry King. That was kind of funny. But yeah, that's happening. Just a quick little thing. I think we talked about it a little bit. Tommy Lee Jones has been already been confirmed for the Captain America First Avenger film, but Marvel has announced who is going to be, and he's Colonel Phillips.
Yeah, It was who everybody assumed anyway.
So I don't really feel the need to talk about that. I think we already have.
We did. We talked about it last week.
No, but now it's official now.
It's official.
Tommy Lee Jones.
I like Tommy Lee Jones just fine. I like him just fine. I think that he didn't deserve the Oscar he got, but that's not really our conversation. He got it for The Fugitive. He beat out
93.
93, 92.
92. 92. Right under the 90s.
Yeah, it was when he beat out Leonardo DiCaprio for What's He and Gilbert Grape.
Right.
That's, you know, one of, like, what I consider one of the
wasn't
biggest.
It also, no, it wasn't the year for
the Gilbert
go kill the dog, or at least go take the bone from him. Sorry.
Powerful performance.
Oh yeah, it was awesome, and you know it's the reason why I don't hate him. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything else should make me hate him, but I
it was the year after that Pulp Fiction came out, right?
Yeah, that was 1994.
Yeah, that's
yeah, that was an insane year.
Yes,
it was like everybody deserved to win mm-hmm. on that one. That was a good year, including somebody we're going to be talking about
mm-hmm.
Later today, Morgan Freeman.
Indeed.
See, other than that,
Star Western number 10.
That's Jonah Hex's first appearance.
Just to reference.
Yeah, I should just write up there. Shay's a big fat dumbass, and see if you read it as a
Shay
geekly happening.
Is
that's not news to anybody in this
no.
room.
Anyone who's been watching this show. Really.
Yeah. No. Another thing is.
Jeff Loeb.
Jeff Loeb is the now the vice president of Marvel Television.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be interesting. It's kind of cool to see these new comic book positions being created.
And this is all still sort of fallout from the Disney acquisition of Marvel.
Yep.
So, you know, it's interesting to see. I'm interested to see where their animation stuff goes.
Oh, I know.
With Disney behind them, quite frankly.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, there's all those fucking anti-establishment people out there. The people that, like, protest outside of Walmart saying Walmart sucks. And, you know, just like those fucking idiots out there. Like, oh, they're going to fucking ruin Marvel. I'm glad Marvel was bought by Disney.
Oh, yeah, so Disney. Was Stan Lee, for crying out
yeah,
loud.
Yeah, I know.
You know.
You know what? Stan Lee.
Oh, everyone you know was worried, oh, they're going to change everything. It's like, they didn't buy them to change everything.
Yeah.
I mean, they bought them because they're a good company that makes money.
They make money, and Disney.
They're not
going to
change Spider-Man
money.
Just because, you know.
Yeah. I hate that shit. I mean, it's one thing to dislike a company, it's one thing to be entirely irrational about it,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's just pure irrationality.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I think the Marvel Disney thing, I think, is just going to be good things. Powerhouse like Disney behind Marvel, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
there's nothing current about this. This
yeah.
is old.
Well,
fucking
you know,
news.
It's just the Jeff Loeb mentioned it in an interview he did,
and
you know, basically he wants to use that you know. Talent, the power and the talent of Disney to make good animation, you know, get them up to Disney level quality. So.
I've always kind of had this feeling in me, and it started with Jim Lee, and with Jim Lee becoming the head of publishing of DC,
uh-huh.
and same thing with Geoff Johns becoming the the head editor. And it's almost kind of sad to be losing these people to executive positions, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
Jeff Loeb's hit and miss, but you know,
I like a lot.
The thing is, so is Geoff Johns sometimes, you know.
Geoff Johns has been consistently good for a long time, really. But you know, but you're right. I mean, nobody's
perfect.
Nobody's
perfect
except for me.
Obviously.
But you know,
every comic book I've read,
an executive position hasn't slowed Geoff Johns down.
Not at all. But you know, he's also got a backlog of work.
Yeah.
But you know, it's fine because he's done some great stuff. He's done some
you know,
bad
it makes
stuff.
It's a position that makes sense for Jeff Loeb because he's worked extensively in television.
But you know, it's kind of something that's
he's
kind of
stuff that he did.
Yeah, he worked in Smallville. He worked on Lost. Quit talking about that thing. If we wanted everybody to know it was there, we wouldn't put it behind the camera, dumbass. But he was on Smallville and Lost. You want to go get it so they can read it?
Can I?
Teen Wolf.
He also wrote Teen Wolf, so he wrote that.
And Commando, one of the cheesiest movies of all time,
according
to me anyway.
Yeah, you did talk about that. I only wrote down a couple of things. I wrote down what I liked that he wrote. He wrote The Long Halloween and Hush, two things that I've talked about. I loved Hush.
Hush was good.
I loved it. And it was also written by Loeb and drawn by Jim fucking Lee.
Yeah,
so,
that
I mean,
was awesome.
Well, there you go.
That's just a 1-2 beautiful punch. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's a good thing for the overall thing, but it's kind of sad to see him. You know, I mean, granted they're still going to be working a little bit, but I'd like to see I'd like to see Jim Lee draw everything that comes out. Cause,
yeah,
you know, and you know, I didn't know this, and this is not really for you guys. It's more, you know, why Jim Lee hasn't been doing a whole hell of a lot lately?
Why?
It's a double thing. One, he was working with Frank Miller on the ill-fated All-Star Batman and Robin, which was awful,
yes.
But the art was beautiful.
I watched the top of the fourth wall.
Wasn't it?
That was pretty brutal.
But the art was beautiful. And he also was doing all the art for the DC Online, game. And
really?
He did all the art for that, so he's been tied up with those two things.
Right. Do you know the artist Gabriel Hardman?
What's he done?
I don't know, but he's just signed an exclusive contract with Marvel, according to Marvel's
team. Oh, yeah, so, I read that.
I don't know. I'm loading it up right now just to see what else he's done.
So,
Gabriel Hardman.
You read any good comic books lately while it's loading?
No, I haven't had a chance to read any. of late. CanCon has been consuming my life. It's 8 days away. So.
I'm actually. Did I tell you I'm all caught up on my polls now?
Yes, you did.
You know, I was unemployed for a while, so I wasn't able to pick up comics. I'm now 100%
employed.
Well, I'm actually I am 100% employed, but I'm also, you know, standing behind a fucking impact wrench all day, hot dog. But
the other thing he's done is Atlas.
Atlas. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
That was an Iron Man thing, wasn't it?
I don't know, dude.
Atlas was a,
I see Captain
like an
America.
Ironmonger. It was like a series.
Avengers. Avengers versus Atlas. It was a miniseries.
Like the God?
Yes.
Is it really the God? I thought it was somebody got their hands on like an Ironmonger style suit. Was
you just make shit up in your head.
No, I'm particularly remembering a picture.
And
I
you
saw.
Particularly make shit up in your head.
I do not.
You do too. I hear you do it all the time. So why don't we talk about the last thing so we can get moving on this? The last thing is the photograph of the new costume of Wonder Woman. I do not. Have you seen it yet, Shay?
I took a look at it.
We're gonna throw it up on the screen, and so the audio of this will have a blip in it. Probably right where I was saying that. Because so many of them come out.
Like the Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man costume they had for a little while, where mm-hmm. he was wearing the like funky like.
And
they rolled it back to the old.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. In Civil War, they put him in a suit of armor for a bit, and then of course there's the Maximum Clonage stuff.
Oh God, that was awful. Yeah, I just don't read. Wow. I've said before, I don't read Spider-Man because every time I read it, it's some awful, awful, awful storyline.
Something that's not really happening is happening.
So, yeah, that's going on Geekly Happenings. You want to talk about anything else?
Gosh, no. The Predator Blu-ray that just came out supposedly sucks.
Imagine that. The movie's not that great to begin with. I said it's not that great. That doesn't mean I don't kind of like it.
Okay. I love that movie, but the...
Don't
apparently,
have time to bleed.
Yeah, apparently the studio went in and digitally scrubbed the hell out of it, so it looks awful. So,
well,
oh well, you know,
people buy it anyway.
Happens. Or two all over the entire
you know, because people love to eat up anything that's put out there.
Glad I heard about it before I bought it. So yeah, well, you know,
maybe they'll come out with something better after Predators comes out, some kind of box set. Yeah, probably not.
Probably not. Yeah.
You know, who knows? Who cares?
You know,
they got a good DVD of it, so you know.
I mean, I've still got the regular DVD, and it's fine.
Do you remember you remember how it took them forever to come out with like a good special edition of Predator, but there was a badass like 2 or 3 disc edition of Predator 2?
Mm-hmm.
The movie sucks. Well, I mean, it's grown on me, but the DVDs are just phenomenal.
It's the epitome of a 90s movies.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
90s, but
Danny
the second
Glover.
One, yeah, Danny Glover, really. Yeah.
They give him the little badge of congratulations, human. You have survived.
Yeah,
Give
him the
it and the, like you know, it, you know, all those fucking geeks out there wet their pants when they saw the alien head on the wall.
Yes,
jeez. Yeah. Well, made the Alien versus Predator movies happen, and I don't care. I haven't seen them; they don't affect me. So.
Moving
on.
Either.
I don't know.
But
other than that,
not my thing.
Really, there's a lot of rumors flying around.
Yeah,
but
rumors,
we don't report on those
rumors.
At all. So,
well, I mean, it's because
nothing I really would want to talk about anyway.
You know, we kind of, you know, we just don't like. It's not because you know we have an anti-rumor stance. It's because we want to have something to talk about later.
Well, we did. Wonder Woman. I know Lauren Shuler Donner is trying to get the rights to Wonder Woman.
I saw that, and I'm cool with that, honestly.
And she's one of the executive producers on the X-Men.
And cool. See, I was reading on Superhero Hype. Like, I sometimes I read the comments when there's something particular.
The comments on that are
they're awful.
Idiots.
And they get worse.
I never read them. I never read them because they're stupid.
I read them because they're stupid. But, like, I read this, you know, it was just like kind of like the same thing on those Wonder Woman things. Anybody that had anything to do with the X-Men movies and it shouldn't have anything to do with another you know, fuck you guys. franchise. You guys ate up those movies.
Yeah.
The hundreds of millions of dollars they made and the expansion of the comic book movies that are coming out
like
now.
I'd like to say, the reason that they're not hearing you bitching is because they're too busy counting their dump trucks of money.
Yep.
That they got from you.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. I'm totally cool with that. You know, when I heard her talking about it, it was just like, there's a great respect for the character, and that's cool with me.
Yeah,
I think they should do a live action version of the TV show, and then at the end of it, they should have
Wonder Woman's a hard character to do.
I wouldn't
on film. I mean, we talked about the hokey costume.
Yeah.
You know,
but it is hokey. But yet they give us something different. They give us something modern, and we're like, fuck that. We want the hokey stuff.
Exactly.
Give us the purple pants. You know, that's just the way it is.
And some characters are just fundamentally like that.
Battle armor, that'd have been cool.
Yeah. See, I just want the regular costume.
The golden, like...
Well, like their, like
shut
their
the
armor.
Fuck up, Shay. Shut up, Ethan.
Okay.
We're going to be moving on to doing a top six of our favorite Pixars. We're going to bring in Rachel.
Rachel.
Special guest star.
A special guest star. I've been trying to get her ass on the show since, you know, I don't know how long you've been listening. Since episode 3 or so.
She's never listened to an episode.
You know what I mean. But we're bringing her in because she knows a little bit about this shit. So stay tuned.
And we're back.
Yep, we're back. We're doing the top six. I don't want to make it all, you know, da-da-da anymore. That's Rachel. Say hi to the camera, Rachel.
Hi, camera.
For all of our viewers out there, this is a girl.
That is a girl.
Yeah.
A real
girl. I was
thinking
earlier, finally got some boob on the show.
Exist. They do. Hell, and this one lets me touch her sometimes.
Uh-oh.
Not sometimes. Not always. Not always.
But
yeah, so we brought her on because, I wanted her to be on the show because I like talking to her. It's fun. And she does have interesting things to say. She just doesn't want to come in and look like an idiot like some people do on the show sometimes.
Well,
we're
done that. Most idiotic.
I don't know. Yeah, she just doesn't want to seem like an idiot. And so what we're doing is, you know, I told her, I want to do Pixar, you know, because Toy Story 3 kind of really whet my taste for it. For Pixar, made me realize, you know, how great of a company this is. It was... It was established in 1979, actually. At the time, Lucas Graphics Groups. It is as old as you are. And go upstairs. Sarah's at the door, I think. Yeah. So, it was established in 1979 by Lucas Graphics Groups. So, motherfuckers, every time you buy a Pixar ticket, a little bit goes to George Lucas. I love it. After that, it was in 1986. It was... it's purchased from LucasArts by Apple, by Steve Jobs, and it was then coined Pixar that we know today, making very, very, very many good things. Like I said, it started out as the computer graphics group, and they had a really costly process of making computer graphics. They're you know, amazing, but they just couldn't keep the company afloat. So they decided when Jobs came on, they decided to start making like shorts. And so like the little I don't remember what it's called. Is it Luxo Junior? The thing with the lamp, I believe that might be what it's called. They made that as a prototypical example of what they could do. And then, you know, they just couldn't keep afloat, so they decided we ought to start putting out movies. And so in 1995, that would be when Disney acquired Pixar did make Toy Story.
And then Disney distributed it, I believe.
Disney distributed it, but it was actually purchased by... Pixar has had a relationship with Disney since those days.
Yeah.
And in 2006, they finally went ahead and they purchased it. And this, you know, once again, like kind of my ire that came out a little bit against Disney haters when I was talking about Marvel is also because of this. Because everyone's all like, you know, I said something on my Facebook when I saw Toy Story 3, I said, you know, it was incredible, and I made a little mention of the short on there, and I said, you know, it reminds me of what it must have been like to watch a Disney movie in the 1920s, and this motherfucker came on and said, oh, well, you know, Pixar is Disney, right? You know, and like, no, it's not. It's owned by Disney, and Pixar trusts the heads. You know, they trust the John Lasseters and all those people, and they do well by it.
Yeah,
and
it's the don't fix it if it ain't broke.
Exactly. Yeah. And Disney's smart enough to do that.
Yeah.
And in that time,
ICP happened.
Where the fuck did this happen? I wrote it down, but I forgot. But yeah, it was acquired by Disney in 2006. Since 2006, they have put out 11 motion-length movies. Their 12th is coming out summer after next, Cars 2. I will probably be seeing it. Well, I'll get into why I'll be seeing it a little bit later. But, yeah. So, I'm a big fan of Pixar, honestly. Over the course of Pixar's... Jeez, dogs. Go kill that thing. But over the course of...
I don't kill dogs.
All right. Over the course of Pixar's history, they have actually been awarded with 24 Academy Awards, 6 Golden Globes, and 3 Grammys, and just a shitload of other awards.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it the most...
Rightfully so. They do.
I agree. Yeah. They do very...
Everything
about,
they do.
You guys, I love Pixar. I love Pixar.
They haven't made... everything they do is just phenomenal.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And so what we've done is there are 11 films that are out right now that are in contendership. So I asked everybody to throw together a list of their top 6 of their most favorite. Let's figure out an order. I'll go first, obviously. Do you want to go second?
Sure.
Let's go me, Rachel, Ethan, that guy.
We'll go from there.
Sounds good to me.
So, yeah. So what I've decided to do is I've come up with my top 6. Goddamn dog. Fuck. All right, guys.
Chasing each other around.
So I put together a list of my top 6 of the favorite Pixar films. And my number 6 is one that... Jesus Christ. I think that... just take the bone away from them. That's probably what they're doing. Well, then slit their throats. Who's knocking at the door?
I don't know.
I swear to God I heard a knock at the door.
I think the dogs are...
So, how about dogs? I like dogs, but running around upstairs on hardwood floor during the show?
Yeah.
It's not cool. So what do you think of being up on the show, Rachel?
Oh, if you explained it to them, they...
That the on-air light is on.
So say something.
And, so, do you like Pixar?
Yes.
See, I actually... Yeah, and this is something that, like I said, Rachel did come on... Shut up. Rachel said that she would come on when there's something that she would know about. And, you know, actually, I think out of the 4 of us, I think Rachel might be the most well-versed in Pixar.
Because
she's got a fucking kid.
Yeah,
and I think, a 4-year-old kid, and she watches these movies, you know, constantly.
Who actually managed to make it on the show before you did.
Yeah. But
Did you hear about the episode?
That was cute.
I did hear about that.
That was cute.
Right in front of it, yeah.
So I think that, I think like all of our top 6 lists, this one is actually going to be, all of them, they're put together 4 different ways. I think the Rachels are going to be put together in a, they're going to be put together in an order of, what makes the kids shut the fuck up the longest.
Right. Which is the real test of any movie, really, is how long it will make your children be quiet.
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm actually wanting to wait for Ethan before I actually spat out my top 6. So, you've seen them all, right?
Yes.
I'm going to go make sure Ethan isn't dead. Why don't you two talk amongst yourselves?
Oh, goodness. So it's the two idiotic people running the show now, huh?
Okay, so actually, I actually thought it was... I kind of thought we were going to have to resort to the Sparkle Pyres to get you on the show.
Yeah?
Or the Buffy episode.
I definitely want to do a Buffy episode. I think that would be cool.
I think we don't have a segment set up for television shows. We've done an episode.
Well, and it would also be kind of hard to do a Buffy-centered episode with me being the only one who knows anything about Buffy.
I actually have seen quite a bit of Buffy.
You've what?
I've seen actually quite a bit of Buffy.
But have you seen all seasons?
I may not have seen every single episode of every single season, but I do believe I've seen episodes from every season.
Okay. Well, there's a big difference, though, because there's some episodes that you just have to see and some episodes that are central to seeing in order to to make lists and yeah, that kind of thing for the show.
I think you're probably right. We'd have to come up with some sort of format or focus on something like the demon musical episode or something like that. That one was awesome.
We're not doing a musical episode of
this
show.
We were talking about Buffy.
Ooh, we could do it.
Red Phone Zone.
No, we could do a spotlight on music.
So, Pixar.
Yeah, Pixar's the fucking shit, yo. I like Pixar. You guys do too?
What's
your sixth favorite Pixar movie?
My sixth favorite Pixar movie, I would not be surprised if it's at least one other person's number one. It is a movie that was nominated for 4 Academy Awards, winning Best Achievement Sound Editing and Best Animated Film of the Year. Other nominees are Best Achievement Sound Mixing, Best Writing, Original Screenplay, which would be 2004's The Incredibles. I love The Incredibles. And I need to point something out. There is not a film on this list that I don't love.
Yeah.
That, you know, there's actually only one Pixar film that I don't like, and that's Cars, and I don't know a little kid that doesn't love the shit out of it. So maybe it's just, there's just something that Pixar's really good at making films that are, you know, that appeal to both adults and kids. You know, maybe they just missed on that one. And I'm also not a gearhead, and I think that maybe if I like Cars more than I do, I might like it. But yeah, The Incredibles, 2004, great, 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 great movie. It's a really fun superhero movie is what it is. I mean, it's honestly one of the best superhero movies to come out in a long time. Mm-hmm.
Brings in the whole like superhero registration issues.
Yeah.
And things that if you're a fan of comic books at all,
yeah, you'd
Incredibles
like
has elements, references and alludes to elements all over the comic book world and really brings them together into one thing. I really liked it. Anyway, I'm sorry.
What? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought this was my turn. But yeah, there's just things about The Incredibles I really, really enjoyed. One of the things I liked about it was Pixar is really good at being subtle and not overdoing things. And I thought it was so fucking cool that the thing that took out the superheroes is something as boring and as mundane as a lawsuit. Yeah. I mean, that's just something that's life for you. I mean, life's a fucking bitch. And it's just really kind of cool putting this life that is a bitch into a comic book. And it's... And I know that I've spoken before about keeping reality out of my comic books, but this isn't the same thing as raping small children and, you know, hentai and bullshit like that. I mean, this is just the mundane aspects of life, and it's like how awful it is, you know, even myself going through the mundane aspects of life. And I've never been a superhero. And just like how awful it would be
you
to go through all those
superhero?
Things. I haven't, believe it or not. So, yeah, my number six is The Incredibles. I loved it. Loved the payoff with Edna, who was actually voiced by Brad Bird, the director, which is really cool. Loved the payoff of that character of her establishing the fact that capes are bad and then being the downfall of syndrome.
That's good. It's good writing.
I love that's one of those things that just really makes me giggle like a little girl is like a really good payoff in a movie. That's a really good payoff in a movie. The fucking Justin Hammer's badass missile going tink in Iron Man 2 is a beautiful payoff in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
That fucking claw thing in the first Iron Man movie giving him the heart. Beautiful payoff. And this movie's just chock full of them. Great characters. I love Holly Hunter. I've talked about it too much. Rachel, what's your number six?
My number six is Monsters, Inc.
Monsters Incorporated.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the reason why it's probably my number six instead of higher on my list is because it went on about that much too long.
I could agree with that.
I think it probably could have ended a little bit sooner. But other than that, it was fun.
So did it come together well, Shay?
Monsters, Inc., I don't remember it as well.
It was fun. It was cute. I loved Boo. She was adorable.
She was adorable.
Not much to say about it. It was just fun.
Monsters.
It's hard to do a character that doesn't speak that still endears themselves.
Oh, and she did. She totally did.
Oh, yeah.
I will have to, you know, I don't know if we're going to call it a spoiler, but who gives a fuck? I'm just Aaron. Monsters, Inc. is the best Pixar film that is not going to fall on my list. I really enjoyed Monsters, Inc. a lot. I saw it in the theater. I'll get to it later, but I have seen every Pixar movie in the theater save one. And I'll get to that at a later point. But yeah, I love Monsters, Inc. We watched it, Saturday or something like that?
Something like that.
It's great. It's actually kind of... You know, I mean, I'm going to sound an awful lot like Shay here, but it's actually almost, in a lot of ways, before its time, you know, what with, you know, the monster city dealing with the same bullshit that we deal with like an energy crisis, and the means about going about getting it, and there actually being a more humane way of doing it, and Well, that might be that's you know, that's putting Shay logic into shit, but I can see it though.
I think
at the same time,
a fundamental part of a good children's movie is one that works on multiple levels.
Right,
that's good to watch for kids, and one good for watch for adults.
Couldn't agree more.
Right,
Pixar does a great job on all that.
I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more. So cool. You got nothing else to say? All right, what do you say, Ethan?
The list I'm making, it's with the caveat that I haven't seen all of the Pixar movies. So
I don't
I'm
think
ranking
Shay's
the,
seen any of them.
I'm ranking the Pixar most movies that I have seen.
Right.
So I mean, this list. Take in mind, I haven't seen WALL-E. I haven't seen Toy Story 3.
I want to go.
I haven't seen Up. I haven't seen any of those. So whereas I understand those are great movies, I want to see them, mind you.
I
want to
go on record. I want to go on record right now as saying, and I want to on the internet recorded. I think that when everything has been when Ethan sees all the Pixar movies, I think WALL-E will be his favorite.
Interesting.
And it's not my favorite. I'll tell you that right now. It's not my number one, but it's really good. I think it's just something that Ethan would really dig.
Mm-hmm. And so,
I really like it.
That's
list,
your caveat. You haven't seen them
list,
all.
With that in mind, my number six would have to be Finding Nemo.
I do enjoy Finding
Nemo. Finding Nemo is a great movie, but. But of all the, I mean, really not saying any of these are bad movies.
And I couldn't agree more.
I mean,
all of these are great.
They're all great films. And Finding Nemo is great. It's a great, father-son.
We watched that one last
age.
Night, right?
No,
I poured. Oh, yeah, that's right. We were at Walmart till like midnight last night.
But as far as just sort of the subject matter and whatnot, it wasn't one that really spoke to me. But it's still a very good movie.
Oh, yeah.
As with can be said about any of the Pixar movies, it's beautiful to watch.
Oh yeah,
it's got great characters, and the thing
Ellen DeGeneres was just hilarious in
Pixar. Pixar's casting in general, I just
good.
Give top notch to. Whereas another place would
It's another place where their subtlety comes through.
Right. Well, they could cast we're going to cast a big star in this, say, Brad Pitt or whatnot, but no, they go for someone who's going to be right for that character.
A perfect example being Craig T. Nelson as
right.
Mr. Incredible.
Exactly. He's not a big-name guy at all.
He could not have been done better.
Right.
Could not have been done better.
And same thing goes for James L. Brooks, it's...
No, it's not James L. Brooks.
Not James L. Brooks.
Albert Brooks.
Albert Brooks, thank
James
you.
L. Brooks is the
is
director.
The, yeah.
Simpsons guy, too.
So.
God damn it.
But that would be my number six, Finding Nemo.
Fantastic. What do you say, Shay?
My number six is actually Bug's Life.
Okay. You gonna talk about it or just look at me?
The sad thing is there are a couple of them I haven't seen. I haven't seen Finding Nemo and I haven't seen Up. I haven't seen Toy Story 2, but I have seen Toy Story 1 and 3. So putting Bug's Life as six is almost like saying it's my least favorite of the Pixar movies.
Well, okay. You haven't seen all of them.
Well, yeah, but I liked it. It was again with the whole everything was great, everything was phenomenal. All of the Pixar stuff is just well done. All of it really comes together well. The Bug's Life I liked. It was based off of Seven Samurai. It was neat. I just don't have much to say about it really.
Yeah. Based off of the ones that you have seen, I couldn't agree more with you putting a Bug's Life on there. I mean, I think that. And to me, it's leaps and bounds. I mean, I would have to say that A Bug's Life is probably my second least favorite of all of them. But don't take that to mean that I dislike it. I would go so far as to say I do dislike Cars, but I think that A Bug's Life is I do like it, but just not as much as some of these other ones. But yeah, okay.
I think the storyline was that was a little bit harder to chew on than.
Ow.
Like, the kids thing.
It's the whole the sophomore entry into the Pixar. It's the second movie they put out, so they're still figuring shit out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They did very well. Once again, they broke the mold with casting with Dave Foley as Flick. Was that his name?
Yes.
Yeah, Flick. He is good. Yeah, I would just watch that. I've actually watched all the Pixar movies in the last week, so all these are well in head. Well, actually, I haven't seen Toy Story 3 in the past week, but I've seen it recently.
I saw Bug's Life in the theater, and that
I
was
did too.
The first movie I remember doing them. What was it?
The outtakes.
The outtakes.
Oh,
the animated movie. That was great.
Animated movie. Yeah. And I was young enough to go, what? And then it took a second, and then I realized, and I was like, oh, that's fucking great.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So what year did Bug's Life come out? What would that be? It would have had to have been 98, probably. 97, 98.
Right.
Shit, you would have been 12, 13 when that came out, huh? 13. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I mean, see, I was like an old adult, you know, well, not, excuse me, an old teenager by the time like any of these came out. So thinking about any of these in like the confines of a...
One of the things that's interesting is that Pixar is able to be successful having put out 11 movies in 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually pretty interesting.
For an animation.
For an animation thing.
It's great for an animation company.
Oh, it's fantastic, dude.
There was a time it was Disney was 5 years between movies.
Disney was more than 5 years a lot of times.
Oh, yeah.
I guess my understanding of the industry was a little
something, you know, once again, I mean, you're kind of getting off topic of the list, but we'll get back to it. I'll remember eventually. Is that it's like that something I wasn't aware of is like these movies cost a lot of money to like a ton of money
and a lot of time.
A lot of money and a lot of time.
I mean, we're talking 4 to 6 years in production time.
Oh yeah, which is part of the it's going to say these are all these are some of the most profitable movies of all time. These movies are like fucking $200 million to make, which is insane. You know, like fucking Avatar costs what $470 million to make or some crazy like that. But you know, like
it's all the time.
Yeah, it's all. But you know, but it's cool that it takes that long. But they take their time as well. So yeah, moving on. It's falling a little bit lower on my list, or higher, whatever you want to call it, is Finding Nemo. As I teased a little bit earlier before, I did say that I was going to get into this a little earlier. I did not see Finding Nemo in the movie theater, and I really regret it. Something about the trailer, it came out in 2003, nominated for 4 Oscars, winning one of the Best Animated Feature. 2003, so I would have been 22, 23 when it came out.
Was that Pixar's first Oscar, or what did they win their first Oscar for?
What did they win their first Oscar for?
For Best Animated Film.
Well,
was it Finding Nemo? No, it was Monsters, Inc.
It was Monsters, Inc. because it was the first year the category was out.
Right.
Okay. So it's actually crazy that they've won so many fucking Best Animated Films. Mm-hmm. But they deserve them, also.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's just all there is to it. I just something about Finding Nemo. I did not want to see it in the theater, and I checked it out when I was out on DVD, and I loved it. And because of that shit, I saw Cars in the fucking theater, and I didn't want to see it. You know, I kind of had that same feeling that this just doesn't look like it's going to appeal to me. But I was all like, I said that shit, and I missed out on a lot with frickin' Finding Nemo. And so I went and saw Cars, and you know, while I'm not saying it's god awful bad, it's just not my cup of tea, Finding Nemo.
And that's why I haven't seen it. I don't doubt that it's not a good movie, but it's just not something I'm interested in seeing. So
I'm
not into Cars. Go figure.
Yeah, me neither. So, and you know, I don't know. There's also something about Larry the Cable Guy
not
being
into
in
Cars.
It.
Go figure.
Yeah, fucking
never
hate Cars. Either. Love Finding Nemo.
Geeks,
I think that. I haven't done a top 6 on this. I'm not going to. I think Ellen DeGeneres probably turned in one of the best vocal performances I've heard in my lifetime.
Which one was she playing?
She was Dory, the crazy, stupid blue fish.
Oh, I haven't seen.
She was all like, "Duh."
Oh. No wonder I can't remember.
Well, that would make a whole hell of a lot of sense. What do you say, Rachel? What's your number 5?
My number 5 is actually Toy Story 3. The only reason why I rank it so low is because. Unless the movie's really fucking fantastic, it takes a while for me to you know, get into it and everything, so I have to see it a few times first. Only seen it once in the theater, so...
I'm going to see it again this weekend.
Yeah, we should see it again this weekend.
I can't wait.
Toy Story 3?
Yeah.
I'm going to take a little one to see it.
Nice.
Yeah.
It was good, though. I mean, it was...
Fantastic, actually.
It was fantastic, yeah. It was fun. It was kind of scary.
Yeah.
It was sad. I actually cried.
I actually cried.
Doing this thing in the theater.
Yeah.
But it was good, yeah, but it just, I have to see it again in order for it to really make an impact, but it was good.
I did do a Confessions on Toy Story 3.
The porcupine was just hilarious.
I don't know, just great movie. I did a Confessions on it, proclaiming my love of the movie. Could not agree more, Rachel. What do you say, Ethan?
Speaking of Toy Story, my number 5 would be the first Toy Story.
Good movie.
And it is a great movie, and it's only so low on my list just because of its age. And they've done better things since then.
Yep.
Not saying Toy Story's bad, obviously, but...
A lot of good, better things.
Technically speaking...
Oh, fantastic.
Technically speaking, the movie, when it came out in 1995, you know, amazing digital graphics, but they've, gone leaps and bounds beyond that now, and you know, they make stuff that's better than Toy Story at this point, but Pixar just sort of set a high bar with their first movie, and they just kept going up and up and up. So,
yep.
Toy Story, You know, it's the one that launched it all. Great movie.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Great movie.
Alrighty. I put down Ratatouille as my fifth.
Now, did you actually see it?
I really liked it. Okay. I like the story.
Mm-hmm. That's
it was
another
neat.
One I haven't seen.
You should.
I kind of like that sort of concept where you have somebody who's sort of like that hidden helper, the little chef, and she like he even tries to tell her about it, and she just the little chef, and totally.
Seemed crazy.
Yes.
Yeah, it's actually my number four. It's my number four. Ratatouille is. Mm-hmm. It was up for four Academy Awards: best animated film of the year, best music written for motion pictures, original score, achievement in sound for sound editing, best writing screenplay. It won best animated feature of the year. Mm-hmm. It is probably Pixar's film, probably with the smallest scope per se. Now, it's got nothing to do with the fact that it's actually about a rat that's cooking.
No.
It's just like a small story. And well, it's
very personal story.
Once again, it's very, very, very well done. It's a love story, but, you know, as much as it's a love story, it's almost more of a love story about food. It's a guy of his love for food, and it's more of a love for his passions. And there's this fantastic... The antagonist of the movie, he is a... well, there's several antagonists, but the one I'm talking about in particular is a restaurant critic named Anton Ego. And he's actually...
Ego.
And he's actually voiced by Christopher Plummer, and just fantastically.
Again, just goes into their brilliant cast.
Yeah, and there's this scene at the end where, you know what, I'm sorry I gotta fucking spoil shit for you, but, you know, he finds out about the rat, but, you know, basically the story, the restaurant he worked in was a 5-star restaurant, he went and reviewed it, and he's all, you know, fuck this restaurant, and it knocked off one of the stars, and the old owner of the restaurant killed himself. And then all this shit happened with the main mouse Remy, and he was actually cooking through the kid in the movie, and started getting rave reviews and everything. And he comes in, and he's like, you know what? I'm disgusted with having to review this bullshit again and whatever. Obviously, I'm paraphrasing.
Right.
Yeah. You're like, fuck you, biatch. No,
it isn't like, right.
yeah. It'd
be
and
he didn't kill himself.
Yeah, I know he. It killed him in a sense.
Okay. I
killed
him.
Yeah, he did not kill. Did I say that?
Yeah.
Well, it killed him. But yeah, it just broke his heart and he died. But so he's just like, you know what? I'm gonna review it because everyone says it's so much better. It's like, you know what? Do whatever. You know, just fucking give me whatever and just do your best to impress me. And he cooks fucking ratatouille, which is a really simple noodle stew. And he brings it out, and there's this beautiful scene when he takes his first bite, and he like just like a flashback to when he was a kid, and he's walking in the door all sad eye with a scraped knee, and he sits down, and his mommy sits him down and pats him on the head, and he takes a bite of his ratatouille, and he writes this review that's basically talking shit on film critics, and in so much as it's a lot of fun to write or read a bad review, but when it comes down to it, the best review written in the world is not as substantial as like the worst product that they are reviewing, and it's cool. I mean, it's kind of funny. It almost gives it a superiority kind of feeling to where they're like, haha, this movie is, you know, critic proof, but it isn't. I mean, it's a really good movie, and I could not recommend watching it more.
Yeah,
fantastic. Well,
I mean, I don't doubt that some of these movies come out. That some of these movies that I'd see would probably obviously supplant some stuff on my list.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't agree more.
They're really nice.
They're all on my Netflix queue. They're all movies I'm going to be seeing.
Yeah. Ratatouille is one of those ones that, like, you know, like how you, like, best Star Wars films, Empire Strikes Back is always on the top of everybody's list.
Sure.
Well, on the Pixar list, it's almost always Wall-E or Ratatouille. One or the other.
It's a fantastic
film.
The two ones with love stories.
Well, spoiler alert, it's not on my list, but I think it does deserve them.
It does
deserve
mention. Okay, so what is your number four?
My number four is Toy Story 1. I forgot how much I actually liked the movie until we watched it again, and then I was like, you know...
She says shit from that movie all the time.
I do. I say, like, God, I can't even remember off the top of my head now, but
watching
the movie, I was like, God, that, I say that every day.
I say
it all the time. And I was like, if it impacted me that much,
it shaped who you are.
I realize how, you know, it's 15 years old now, and it's made that impact on pop culture.
Yeah.
And Toy Story movies have always had those great adult humor in them. And I remember my sister, mm-hmm. when she first saw the movie back when, I didn't even see it in theater, but she saw it in the theater.
She
came and just, like, raved about how great it was. They were the only adults in the theater laughing about this. And, yeah, and I just loved that it was great.
There's a lot of adult undertones in all these things, especially Toy Story.
There's a lot of fundamentally, that's Pixar does that well.
Yeah,
you know,
they do.
To do a good children's movie is you got to have stuff like that that's going to keep the adult in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's all just, you know, dancing around, you know, people with magic bags, then no one's going to care.
Right, exactly.
You know, we're going to go there and go,
God damn, is this over? Well, at least the Transformers trailer was cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know,
I know.
But they make those references and jokes and sort of double entendres every once in a while
that little kids aren't going to get, and then that but adults are going to get. And the nice thing about it is, as the
when they get older,
as the kid grows up and keeps watching the movie again, they'll start picking that stuff up again.
Right.
You know, and that's why I love Pixar in general. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was my number four.
Fantastic.
Yes, excellent. Toy Story 2 is my number four. So, Toy Story 2.
I can't believe you've seen Toy Story 1 and 3, but not 2.
Sequel to the 1995 Toy Story, obviously. And
it's got an interesting story as well.
It's got a good story.
And I don't mean the story in itself, like the story of how the movie came to be.
Yeah.
Because it was
going to be like direct-to-video.
It was
going to
be a direct-to-video. It was like a Disney thing. Because Pixar entered into a contract with Disney that they would give them X amount of dollars, but they had to produce, you know, 1, 2, 3 of their movies. And so what they did is Disney forced them to make Toy Story 2, and they said, you're going to release it direct-to-video, and by the way, that doesn't count towards your total. And they're like, well, fuck you, we're going to release it theatrically, and it made a shitload of money.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a really good movie.
It's a good movie, in my opinion, obviously, better than the original. You know,
yeah, I agree.
Hard to do with the sequel in general. But that one, you know, progressed the story. The kids grew up, you know, grew up some more. And, you know, I'm looking forward to watching Toy Story 3 based on how good Toy Story 2 was.
Yeah, well.
So,
3 is amazing.
3 is a very good movie.
I don't know. I didn't like 2 quite as much as 1 and 3.
I agree. But
make my list, so.
Well, it didn't make my list either. I'll give you that. If there is a Toy Story in here, there is only one. I do that often. I don't put multiple chapters. But I've seen all the Pixar movies, so I have the luxury to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. What's your number
four?
Are you done? Sorry.
Yes.
My number 4 is Toy Story 1. It was just phenomenally lighthearted and happy. And, there was... just that idea of your toys having plans and thinking about how much you play with them and all that kind of, that whole concept was just really phenomenal. And I picked Toy Story 1 over 3 because I thought 3, for a toy, you know, to me, it was a toy movie. It was about childhood and toys. And I really appreciate why, you know, and where they went with Toy Story 3, but it seemed to get a little more adult than I wanted Toy Story to be about, you know. It was more about growing up and finally passing your toys on, whereas Toy Story 1 was about playing with toys, and I really love that.
You are so oblivious. So we're moving on to what, my number 3? Is that where we're at?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I just cannot see how you misconstrued that movie as suchly at all. But my number 3 is WALL-E. In my opinion, I told this to Rachel the other day, it is my number 3, but I do think it's probably the best film that Pixar has made. I mean, it is a fantastic movie. It is a movie that...
It's almost enough said. It's almost wordless.
It almost is. I mean, he's absolutely right. It's like, you know, it's all done through boops and beeps and stuff like that, and there is a little bit of English, and this movie would have translated so well to other cultures. It's not something to where, you know, there's American sensibilities in it to where you're going to lose it, because it's literally the story of, like, pretty much 2 robots, and you know, and by the way, there's this other stuff going on with the humans, and...
Humans are still around.
Yeah, he's right. I mean, he said enough said. I was just thinking, like, it's hard to say why it's so good. I mean, it's very It's just a movie that's very evocative of emotions. I mean, it's hard to put into words how this movie makes you feel, because it almost makes you feel dirty being a human in a lot of ways, especially with the way that the humans are portrayed in it. But it's a fantastic movie.
It reminded me just ever so little slightly of THX-1138 with the random, where the humans were just buying things for no reason and changing clothes because everybody changed clothes at the same time because there was a commercial saying change your clothes.
Right. Kind of thing. Like, ooh, red. It's the blue. It's the new red. Yeah.
You know.
So, yeah, that's my number three. What's your number three?
My number three is actually Wall-E.
You like Wall-E, do you?
Yeah. The only reason why it's number three and not number two, because I actually had it switched earlier, is because of the way that humans were portrayed. I don't like seeing myself as that future fat.
See, I
want to
be. I want to be.
Human interaction.
Yeah. I want to be that future fat person.
No, I
cupcake
don't.
In a cup, floating around in a chair. That's the shit.
No, well.
That's so cool.
The fact
cool.
that they can't use their legs in there, they're like, oh my god, what are these things
that
are on the bottom? Where
they dichotomized the like the promo pictures where it's like jogging and walking in the.
Well, and then like there's one scene where like
very
cuts out, and then he's like, oh my god, there's a human next to me. What the fuck? And,
yeah.
That's the only reason why it's not higher. It's just because I'm like, I don't want to end up there. But other than that, the movie is great.
It's very unflattering of a human.
It is
movie.
Very unflattering. Yeah.
But
I love one. I love the cockroach. I think that is probably my favorite.
Great fucking character.
Favorite cockroach. Character. I'd say probably even above.
Oh, he's a little dude thing that's in the it's hanging out in Wally's.
The cockroach. Yeah. I love him. He's funny.
In a lot of ways, he reminded me.
Wally.
I mean, it's. Not the same thing, but for some reason he always evoked Wilson from Castaway in me. Just like this character to where, you know, he really isn't giving any input, but Wall-E needs that output, and so he's putting it into this poor little cockroach. I don't know. No, you're right. I haven't thought about that. You know, good observation, Rachel. What do you say, Ethron?
Well, my number three is one that's high on my list for an obvious reason. It's A Bug's Life.
Yes.
And it's an obvious. Obviously, it's high on my list because it's The Seven Samurai.
Right.
Yeah.
But,
I'm surprised
but
it's not your number
Hanks.
One.
I was expecting it to be your number one.
Actually, I'm not.
And it's it's the second Pixar movie that
you
came
like
out,
it.
And you know around the same time Ants came out.
So. Oh, Ants was fucking awful.
But then Bug's Life though just had. You know, a fun story, and it was obviously I call it the Disney version, but they weren't Disney
right.
at the time. But the Disney version of the
Seven Samurai
and Magnificent Seven. You know, I mean, you had some just some funny characters in the
fucked up
the
imagery.
Ladybug, but,
messed up imagery.
Like what's like the himself. With the with Heimlich? Yeah, Heimlich being cut in half in the kids' stories.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and then the whole "I am a beautiful butterfly." You're like ants to me.
Yeah, and they are ants. You're like, ha-ha, that's funny because they are ants.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, you know, Heimlich never did it for me. I always thought he was a little too over the top for Pixar, but you know, he's a fun character.
He's the comic relief.
I always liked Tuck and Roll.
Tuck and Roll. You know, a good example. Again, you were just talking with Wall-E. I mean, they're characters that can't really speak, and well, they do, but they don't communicate.
Right, you know, they're
verbally.
Russian or whatever.
Yeah,
they are.
And so it's an interesting. It was the first real time that they did stuff like that, where they had characters you know, like that. Mm-hmm. So
I like the crazy grasshopper. What was his name?
Hopper?
Hopper.
No,
oh, the crazy one?
Crazy. The crazy brother one.
Mongo?
The one they
I don't remember.
Yes.
He had the great outtake where he's like, and, you know, action. And then the cut. Oh, was that too over the top? Was it really that good?
Yeah.
And he was just acting like this prissy actor.
And again, the
outtakes are always fantastic.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So, Bug's Life for me, number three.
Yeah, I like Bug's Life.
Yeah. I actually liked Ants more, but I like Woody. I like Woody. What's his name's humor?
Woody Allen.
I like his patter. So I liked Ants.
Oh, Bruce Campbell did have a voice in it.
Yeah. Ooh, because Bruce Campbell never does bad movies.
Oh no, never.
Bruce fucking Campbell, motherfucker.
That's right, Bruce fucking Campbell.
Moontrap. All right.
Moontrap. So that'd be your number three.
My number three is also Wall-E.
Sweet. So we got a 3-3-way for Wall-E.
Yeah.
You going to talk about it, or did you do it enough?
We've talked about a bunch. I think...
Mercifully, he's not going to talk.
The love story angle was really interesting to see how Eve... behave throughout the whole thing.
The holding hands.
Yeah.
The song.
You know what?
I love that part.
You guys say love story. Everybody says love story. Creators see love story. I almost see it more like he's just reaching out for companionship. More than love, more than romantic love, which is what it's kind of implied, but they're fucking toasters, you know, and they don't have the romantic love in them.
I think there is a metaphor of being more than just shovels and being more than just toasters, and naming
but
the character
not.
Eve, I think, was definitely
that was a little over the top.
It
for
was
me.
Like from a sort of a constructional point of view, they were trying to convey that message.
I would almost like to think they came up with the name of the robot. Like, hey, that's Eve. That works, but I'm sure it was, and I'm sure
no,
it's all you know. Yeah,
mother
know.
Of
blah, yeah, yeah, blah, yeah, yeah. No, but okay. God, I disagree with you. My number two is actually one that has fallen on this list. It's Toy Story 3. I could not disagree with what Shay said about it more.
And I'm going to say on my review.
But I'll just delete it because I have an administrative thing to the thing. Toy Story 3 was, I consider my viewing of it one of like Aaron's important film viewings in his life. I have like those times when I see a movie to where, you know, it's not like, hey, that was cool. That was, you know, it really just, you know, evokes something in me. And I think, you know, like, it, you know, my cherry was popped per se with just like, you know, it's not obviously on the list and it can't really even be an honorable mention, but it's with the introduction of Day and Night,
Night and Day.
That was just. I'm lost for words with explaining that thing, and it just really kicked my ass into gear for what I was about ready to see. I think that Toy Story 3 is actually the superior of the Toy Story movies, and I also think with the addition of Toy Story 3 to the series catalog, it turned around and it made Toy Story 3 probably the greatest trilogy ever put to film. It is absolutely perfect. Shay says the shit all the time about a movie coming together or what have you.
And Toy Stories. All the Pixar stuff is.
Well, yes, but Toy Story in particular, I mean, there's not a wasted moment. It's just perfect. It's currently. Obviously, we haven't got to the Oscars yet. It's only been out for not quite 3 weeks, and it's made $358 million worldwide. And on Rotten Tomatoes, last I checked, it had a 98%.
Which is unheard of.
It's not unheard of. I mean, obviously, Ethan had two 100%. But the thing that I think is funny about it is it's been reviewed like a whole bunch of times, and it got reviewed by this motherfucker named Armand White, who is known as a troll. Roger fucking Ebert called him a troll in an interview, saying that he's got no viability in the film critic thing. He pretty much, like, he'll talk shit on a movie like, you know, like Toy Story 3. He's never gave a positive review to a single Pixar thing. He says that the Toy Story movies are nothing more than merchandising machines for the commercialization of America. And then the motherfucker turns around and raves about a movie like
Transformers
2. And hated the first one. Talk shit on a movie like.
Wait, he liked Transformers 2. Loved didn't like Transformers 1.
He liked Transformers 2 because of the. I don't really want to. I'm tired of giving this guy this much airtime, but he said that he liked Toy Story. Or rather, Transformers 2 because of the recognition of the toy brand, which is.
What?
Yeah, it's hypocritical.
So he's going to bash.
He turned
Toy Story, mm-hmm. and then okay. So moving
he,
on,
he gave. I'm just trying to hammer home like how big of a douchebag this guy is. He gave a positive review to The Hurt Locker. He actually got to see an advanced screening. Catherine Bigelow actually gave it to him to see. Gave a glowing review of it, and but expected it wasn't doing very well. It did not do very well pre-screen wise, and everybody knows it went on to win the Best Picture and Best Director and quite a few, one other Oscar at least. But and he ended up calling it after that the worst film of the year.
Wow.
So he's a fucking douchebag. But getting back onto this is a movie that, and the other negative review was Harry Knowles. And if you guys don't know who he is. He's ain'titcoolnews.com.
The name actually is familiar.
But he's very much, he's like, you know, almost the president of the geek culture, so to speak. And his negative review of it, I've read it, isn't a negative review. And it's he says in it it's a fantastic movie.
It's just critical.
God, I don't want to spoil it, but he does not like the way the movie ends because Andy gives away Woody.
Right.
And it's just so cool that it evoked that in him.
Right.
That the fucking one and zeros on the screen, because that's what it is, it's just a fucking computer program, gave it away. It evoked that emotion in him. I'm done. And the scene in the incinerator, I'm sure that Ethan's seen anything. He's heard at least somebody say something about an incinerator scene. I won't go into great details. Probably
poignant.
It's very poignant, but probably one of the best scenes in a film I've seen in my life.
That's where the tears started.
And then they didn't stop.
They didn't stop until the movie stopped, pretty much.
If you want, more of what I think on this movie, go check out my review on redphonezone.com. Fantastic movie. Rachel, number two. And we stole the glasses. Yes. That's my way of sticking it to the man.
My number two is Up. I don't know what to say about Up. It's funny. It's heartwarming. It makes you cry. The dogs are great. Kevin's great.
Kevin. You didn't seem to appreciate Kevin as much until the other viewing.
Yeah. Well, I've actually tried to watch Up like four times and have not watched it all the way through until this last time I watched it. So I've only seen it once all the way through. But I laughed my ass off, actually. I thought it was pretty good.
Yep.
And, of course, cried. And, it was good. It had a little bit of everything, and it was a good story about dreams and all that good stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. No much else to say.
Yep.
What do you guys think?
I haven't seen it, so.
I know.
Neither am I. I won't.
You really should. Good movie.
There's an old guy, and apparently he yells about squirrels.
I did not like the bad guy, though. I mean, I know
actually,
you're not supposed to like the bad guy, but I could not stand his character. I did not like him.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I disagree, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Ethan, number two.
My number two is Monsters, Inc.
Yep.
And I can narrow down Monsters, Inc. to why I like it. There are various reasons. I mean, the Boo character's great. You know, mm-hmm. She doesn't speak. You love her, and she's pretty much the only human in the movie.
Yeah.
But there's a scene in it, and I'm just talking... I was watching the movie, and there's a scene in it where I was sitting there watching the movie, and I realized, looking at how they had Sully up on screen, and I realized they were animating every
piece of hair
on him.
Yeah,
and
I've
as it was blowing through that. And I realized it as I was in the theater watching it, and it just blew me away.
They have since written programs to do that, but you're right. At the time, they did animate every single piece of hair.
I was watching it, and I just remember just going, wow.
Yeah.
And picked my jaw up off the floor, and it just increased my appreciation for the entire movie.
I think that's the movie that, when we were watching, I said that there was no doubt in my mind who did any of the voices. I mean, I saw John Goodman. Mm-hmm. I saw Billy Crystal. I saw Steve Buscemi. I saw James Coburn. I mean, it was just, mm-hmm. It was. I really like it.
Yeah, great movie. And that just when I was watching it, that little bit of realization.
Just like what it took.
Increased my appreciation of it.
It won Best Picture. Well, Best Animated.
And, I watched a special about how they made that and the different versions of the hair that they went through before they came
and
up with the
it's
final
just breathtaking.
They actually perfected that hair technology on The Incredibles. Mm-hmm. There's actually a little thing on it for the DVDs.
Yep. Purple hair.
Well, just for hair, period.
Yeah. Well, she's the only one.
It was for
really
long hair. Yeah.
But that's my number two.
Sweet.
It's also my number two. And the reason being that I am really taken with the idea of... It reminded me of the Monsters, the Little Monsters movie. You know, the idea of the...
Oh, yeah.
Of the industry of, like, of the monsters working together to scare kids. You know, just putting, like, some sort of, like, world behind that and giving it a reality of, like, monsters sneaking in and out of people's houses and having, day jobs and you know, guilds and union work and all that kind of thing. I just thought it was really cool.
Sweet.
I like the idea of how you give in to the being scared of monsters, you give them power.
Right,
here in this movie, you give in to the monsters, you actually give them power.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and just like how how just awful, great of a scene, but just awful did you feel for Sully when he scared Boo accidentally when he was, you know, when he was doing the demonstration and she saw him? I mean, that was just, that was so sad. That was so, so sad. I mean, it's, I really like it. I mean, like I said, it's the best one. I didn't put on my list.
And I like how the two characters swap basically positions at the end of the movie.
That is kind of cool. That is really kind of cool. I mean, I don't know. You're right. It's an all-around good movie.
It's been a long time since
I've seen it. Right. It's an all-around good movie.
It's been a long time since I've seen it, but I remember really, really liking it when I did watch it.
Okay.
All right. I think we're to our number one.
We are to our number one. Obviously, we don't want to get into... we don't want to really get into honorable mentions at this point because there's just too little of them to really do that.
All the ones we didn't mention.
All the ones we didn't mention, unless the ones we're going to mention. So yeah, my number one. It should not be a surprise to anybody listening on the show. I have spoke my love of this movie several times, and that would be Up. It is. It was nominated for what is this? 1, 2, 3. A lot of Oscars. Best Achievement in Music Written for Motion Pictures, which it won. Original Score, which it won. Best Animated Film of the Year, which it won. Best Achievement in Sound Editing, Best Motion Picture of the Year, Best Writing, Screenplay Written Directly for the Screen, which those last three it did not win. Second animated movie to ever be nominated for the big prize, the Best Picture. First, obviously, being Beauty and the Beast. Thank you for stealing that my wind.
That's what I do.
Like I said before, I loved Toy Story 3. I agree with Rachel that it's going to have to grow on me because I have only seen it the once, and maybe it was better. Maybe it wasn't as good as I'm wanting to make it out to be. I don't think so. I think it is very, very, very good, but it's certainly better than I thought it was going to be. I mean, it's fucking awesome, and I do still think it's the best of the three. There's no two ways in my mind about that. I think WALL-E is probably the best... it's probably the best achievement, but Up is just like a movie that's... Rachel and I were talking about it the other day. It's actually kind of like... It was tailor-made to get at my heartstrings, honestly. I mean, that movie makes me cry in three scenes, and I think I've seen the movie 5 or 6 times, and I did not cry only the last time I saw it. I mean, it's just so evocative of so many emotions in me. I had just gone through a separation at the time, a divorce, and there's the whole thing about the guy having to be alone. I have a soft spot in my heart for cantankerous old fucks, and that was the main character of the thing.
Because you are a cantankerous old fuck.
God, I'm on my way, by God.
On your way? Shit.
I'm there. I just don't... I'm going to be even more cantankerous.
Older fuck.
I'm going to be a cantankerous old as fuck. But yeah, the way that they dealt with the animals, Doug was... God damn, I love Doug. I want one of those collars for Diesel to see what he has to say. And it probably would
squirrel.
Be... It probably would be. Squirrel, or, you know, I don't want to go. I want to pee inside, or, you know, just something
let
like that.
Let me in. I got to pee.
So he has like a dog, a talking dog collar?
Yeah, it's a collar. Awesome. But it's literally
you're
like...
outside with him, and he's like, let me in.
I gotta go pee. Yeah. and what funny thing about it is, it's got that. And I 100% disagree with Rachel about the villain. I loved the villain, but I don't think that he is a great villain. He is a very tragic character. Well, basically, what he was is he was a guy that went off to Paradise Falls, where the movie actually ends up taking place, to look for this, you know, this bird, and he finds a skeleton, and he brings it back, and some motherfuckers lied and said that he made it up, and he did not find it, so he went back to, you know, prove his good name, and he never found it, and he finds this bird, and he's absolutely obsessed with his goal. And, you know, when he meets the old man, when he meets Russell and even Doug, well, he doesn't meet Doug. Doug is his dog. But, you know, he is genuinely happy to see them, and he wants to hear what their story is and what's going on. But they're standing in between him and that thing that he's been working towards all of his life. And I think he's a tragic character, and he's a very good character. And I think he's a fantastic villain. I do have an
antagonist, at least.
He's an antagonist. I mean, villain's a hard word for him, because he does try to do some... He does do some fucked up things. Not really in the movie, but it's certainly implied. And he does try to do some messed up things. But I love the movie. I think that it's... Honestly, you know, considering that it just came out 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, the animation isn't that hot. The 3D is spectacular, but it's a really stylized animation. I mean, it's really squishy. It almost reminds me of smoothed out Frank Quitely art in animation form. But story wise, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it does look sort of gnomy in the picture.
Yeah, and it's just I love it. It's
That's the first thing that I thought. I love the poster
that movie.
Was that it was like, oh, it's the garden gnome.
Yeah,
the garden gnome. But it's a
stylistic kind of art, and I'm not reading a comic book. I'm not looking at the Mona Lisa here. This is a movie, and you know, right or wrong, this is how they chose to make it. And you know, they're not gonna make or break a movie for me with the art, and they're gonna get me with the story and the characters and what it evokes emotionally for me. And it just nailed me with all those things. It was my favorite movie that came out last year, and you know, this year probably my favorite movie that's come out is Toy Story 3, and I see it very, very difficult to replace that in my mind. It's easily my number one. Rachel,
My number one is Finding Nemo. I don't know. It's really light and funny in some spots, but dark and heavy in others.
The opening scene is...
The story between the father and son and letting go and all that stuff, you know, obviously that speaks to me as a mother. Plus I've seen it about a trillion times with Chloe.
I don't know.
It's another one of those movies where I'm like, wow, I say that in my everyday life all the time. It's had an impact on a lot of people around me. My 9-year-old nephew even named his cat Squishy.
Squishy after
the...
You are the jellyfish.
The baby jellyfish.
You are Squishy. I shall call you Squishy.
Yeah. I don't know. It's got a lot of fun things in it. But
it's
a
fantastic
great
story movie.
At the same time. It's also got... I don't know. It's just fun to watch. It's beautiful to watch too.
I mentioned the water. I can just imagine the
water. That's something about it. That, like, you know, 95% of the movie takes place under the ocean, and like probably 99% of it takes place underwater of some kind. But you know, no two scenes look the same. I mean, there's different lighting. There's, you know, they're in coral reefs, so they're in deeper parts of the ocean, or they're in an aquarium, or you know, it's something that could have been really easily just you know cut and paste. You know, every background. It's not one of my choices, so I don't know. It probably would have been 2000. Oh, it was too one of my choice. It was 2004 maybe. Something like that. 2003.
Yeah,
it's the only one I didn't see in the theater, and I regret it to this day.
I didn't see it in the theater, I regret that too. A couple other reasons why it made number one is because I have been to Australia, and I was Australia the year before it came out, so, you know, that kind of has a soft place in my heart with the whole Sydney and the Opera House and all that good stuff. I lost my train of thought on that.
Derail.
I can't even think of what I was going to say now. But yeah, Ellen DeGeneres. She is one of
hilarious.
My favorite comedians.
See, I don't
like her as... No, I love her.
I don't,
her
but she was awesome
different
in
things,
that.
And she's like that in her life. The way she was with Dory. The way she presented Dory.
Ellen
she's
DeGeneres
like that
isn't
with
really
comedy
a phenomenal actress, but she has an amazing sense of
she's
timing.
She's great. So yeah, she does. Great timing.
See, you know, like, comedy-wise, it could take her or leave her, but I love Dory.
I've actually seen her live in performance, actually.
Really? Wow.
On TV.
No.
The Lead Center? Yeah, that would have been nice. I love Ellen DeGeneres, so that just kind of made the whole thing for me.
Yeah, she's a great character.
Yeah, Dory was awesome. So yeah, that was my number one.
Fantastic.
My number one is no surprise to anyone. It's The Incredibles. I felt The Incredibles was a movie that was
tailor-made
for me.
Yeah.
It's a superhero movie with James Bond elements. I'm there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you got a dude who picks up buses and hurls them about. You got the speedster character. I'm like, shit, man. Sign me up.
Yeah. God, that was a great movie.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, it was well-written, well-directed. I'm like,
heartwarming.
Very few times do I go see a movie more than once in the same weekend. I saw that one twice on the same weekend.
That's a great movie.
Basically what Ethan just said.
I knew it was going to be your number one also.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, I mean, tailor-made superhero stuff. I mean, yeah. Taking the superhero world into the home
environment,
I think is an important thing.
I do think that if we go and we filled in both of these guys' blanks, Ethan's list would change. I don't think Shay's would. But, you know, I don't think his number one would change. But I do think that the overall structure of the list.
I think you're right, though, that Wally probably stands the best chance. It's another one that's very tailor-made for my type of...
It's like 2001, but good.
Oh no, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's like 2001, but not boring
but
as fuck.
Not stab out my eyes.
No, don't get me wrong. The effects,
powerful movie. Powerful
the
movie
effects 2001, in 2001 were incredible, but it's so fucking boring to watch.
Gotta say, the only scene that I... 2001, I recognize it like the Rolling Stones.
Yep.
I recognize its impact, but I hate it.
Daisy.
That whole little bit was the best part of the movie.
Yeah. The bit where he's taking down the... anyway, we're talking about...
Pixar!
Incredibles is... it's a great movie. The music in it's great. The style of it is great.
It has that sort of... Like, it's taking superheroes and giving them something of a grounding into a real life and reality of, mm-hmm. like, of kids and lawsuits and what happens when they put their capes away.
Like I keep saying, Pixar is so good at the subtle.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if this were made by fucking DreamWorks, it would be a supervillain that took him out. Not something as boring and mundane as a lawsuit.
Something that makes you hear it. It's like a joke. You don't, like, laugh. It's not a laugh-out-loud joke. It's a, joke. You know, it's like a, And they do a lot of that. A lot of good humor in that sense.
Yeah. I really enjoy it. I actually, if I would have... See, we're doing this basically because, you know, I love Pixar, but I didn't think I realized how much I loved it until I saw Toy Story 3 and I said, holy shit, and then I'm like, wait a minute, and then I'm like,
I love
pretty much everything they do, and then, you know, it's taking the world by storm, like, I want to do this. If I had given myself more time, I probably would have ordered myself a Mr. Incredible shirt, because they have them. Like, with the lightning bolt on it. They even have the blue ones. And they have a Syndrome shirt. They have all that shit. I probably would have got one, but I didn't. But
Syndrome was such a hilarious...
Oh, Syndrome was a great villain. Fantastic villain.
It was just...
Fucking Lee. Well, not yet.
Yeah, that overlooked guy who just, you know, got tired of not being... I can't be your sidekick, the no one kind.
And it's also kind of, you know, and once again, I'm fucking broken record here. Pixar and their subtlety. When they're showing, first off, you goddamn know that when Mr. Incredible when Buddy was first introduced, when he's all like, Buddy! You know that goddamn well that was Bruce Campbell and Brody from fucking Mallrats, because it was Jason Lee.
Right.
But once again, the subtlety is, it was really neat how the seeds of who he became as an adult were planted as a child, but he literally wanted to help Mr. Incredible, but he just wasn't ready. And which is like that whole arrogant line of his. He's all like, I built these things myself, I can fly. Can you fly? I mean, that's a really evil, fucked up thing for a little kid to say, but, you know, once again, in the hands of somebody less capable, it would have been, you know, they would have either overdone it or not put anything like that in there. And I mean, yeah, it's a great movie. I love it.
Just little elements all the way through. Yeah.
Maybe it's the non-geek in me, but yep.
Chloe loves the fuck out of Jack Jack Attack. How many times has she watched that?
She loves Jack Jack Attack. I think that, obviously I fell asleep in it when we watched it this last week, so within like probably 15 minutes.
You fall asleep in everything.
I stayed awake during all of the other ones. Thank you
very much. Yeah, but we watched them earlier.
No.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I love The Incredibles. I love The Incredibles. But, you know, obviously I love others more. But, yeah, guys, I love Pixar. If you have not seen Toy Story 3 yet, go see it. If you've seen it, go see it again. If you've seen it again already, see it again. I mean, it's a really good movie. It deserves every bit of the praise you get. And, you know, fuck Armand White, honestly. I mean, the guy's a motherfucker as far as I'm concerned.
I'm looking forward to seeing Up. And Ethan should definitely see Wally.
Ethan should see all of them.
I have Wally. Would you like to borrow it?
He's got him Netflix.
I wouldn't have any time to watch it. And I think it's on Netflix Instant Watch.
Yeah, it is. But so that's been obviously our little conversation about Pixar. Let's put a pin in this shit and move on and do a characterization of the DC Comics character Jonah Hex. You going to stick around or you going to go away?
I'm going to go away.
Good. That makes it look like I can stretch out.
I know what characterization shit is.
Yeah.
You can just sit there and make snide comments.
True.
I can go. okay. We just got done talking about Pixar. We're back. We're going to be talking about a characterization of Jonah Hex. Did you really do? I doubt you did anything towards this, did you, Ethan?
No.
I didn't figure you'd have time.
I know nothing about Jonah Hex and, other than the cartoon or the movie.
So you did absolutely nothing.
Correct.
I didn't figure you would.
Before
you start talking about all your fucking dice and geek shit, why don't you explain the origins of the character of Jonah Hex?
Well, Jonah Hex was sold into slavery as an adolescent by his father. There's some debate as to what he was sold for, but he was...
It depends on the writer.
Depending on the writer, he was sold for various different reasons, but the story holds that he was sold into slavery as a small child.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, he was sold to a Native American tribe, so which was a little...
Ethan's all like, I didn't see this in the movie.
This wasn't in the movie.
Yeah, it was sort of like, huh? But anyway, he was raised by a Native American tribe. He excelled at being...
Everything.
At everything, basically. And
more so than the chief's son.
Yes, Nonk Tao or something like this.
I don't remember his fucking name.
I was reading it earlier today. And
Indian taco.
The shaman... Indian taco.
You guys got bear? Oh,
right. the shaman adopted Hex and gave him a...
Sink in.
Anthony. You got any beer?
The shaman...
This is not a racist joke. It's a friend of ours. Sorry.
But he was offered the chance to compete in a tournament to be the next chief of the tribe. His adopted brother sort of stabbed him in the back, and
he gave him a broken tomahawk for the fight.
Right, and then
said broken tomahawk was heated up in a fire and pushed up against his face, hence the fucked up face.
I was gonna get to that. And that's not exactly what happened. He pulled a knife on him, and that's the reason they then took.
That's why he got the thing put up to his face, because he pulled a knife.
He pulled a knife.
They were both given
ceremony combat.
The ceremony combat. They were both given tomahawks. Jonah Hex's was tampered with and it broke, and so he was supposed to fight without it. He was about ready to die, and he pulled a knife on his brother, and hence the fucking burning of the face.
And it was the demon mask, is what they called it. And they put this thing on
it. So
face.
It wasn't a QT brand like they had in the movie.
No, it was
a tomahawk.
The family that raised him. So his first father sold him to slavery. His second father burned his face with a tomahawk, and then he went to join the Confederate side of the Civil War Army and accidentally shot the Jackson or somebody because he honored the Emancipation Proclamation and put down his weapons. And then he went and did some stuff, had a kid, and was teleported to the future.
And he's dead now. So.
No one knows how he gets back to back from the future, and then he was shot. The story goes
playing cards, right?
He was playing cards, and someone else just ran up into the place, ran up to the table, and shoved a shotgun right in his chest and killed him.
So it was Turnbull.
Yeah, Turnbull.
It was Turnbull.
Not a fair fight. It was not a duel.
So he's fucking dead, but because the stories are told in the past and he's the
and
time traveler thing then, you know, he's obviously, you know, it's very ripe for storytelling.
They're going to be able
and
to
so,
do next.
So this is probably coming as a surprise to Ethan, but hopefully it's not coming as a surprise to any reviewers. He is not much like he was portrayed in the movies. He did not have any wiggity-wiggity powers or anything like that. He's just a badass when it came down to it. I mean, he was, he was a bounty hunter. He was, he was a good shot, good fighter. Mm-hmm. He obviously, he wears all of his experience on his face.
Yeah.
So, based off of that rationale, I told Shay, with my limited knowledge of the role playing game things, he would strike me as a ranger.
And I could not agree more. I had tinkered with some like druid or cleric stuff in mind, and I was.
But see,
like,
that's
no,
just
no. He has no. Powers really doesn't
no.
be represented that way.
He the thing actually one of like the most common things about Jonah Hex is his lack of commitment to anything. I mean he does he you know he doesn't stay in the Confederate Army. He does not.
He just put his weapon down.
He does not. He does not have any long-standing fucking allies.
The woman who,
like, couple, did, but,
who bore his son,
yeah,
just took his son and left at,
yeah,
one point.
I mean, and so that would be really tough to make him a druid. Or I've heard. Well, I mean, I imagine that Paladin would come up, but he
just
doesn't believe
in
anything.
Yeah, he's not an adherent. You could do straight fighter, but
I try to avoid
straight fighter because it's just.
Well, it's not even. It just. It wouldn't even be appropriate because he is very much a master of his surroundings. And
the Native American upbringing definitely brings in all of that, like, trackless step and one with nature thing. I was looking specifically at the Pathfinder Ranger and
Pathfinder.
It's the
3.6.
Right.
3.6. It's not 3.75.
Oh, yeah. Actually, looking through it, it doesn't seem like it has progressed that far.
It hasn't.
Far.
It's not worth a full quarter of a point.
But the there was something. The favorite enemy, human and zombie, would be his second one. I figured he'd be about 10th or so level Ranger before going into a prestige class.
Zombie.
Yeah, in the future he fights zombies.
But why would that make him a zombie?
No. Favorite
enemy.
Then I agree.
So first would be human, because he fought
humanoid,
human.
Right.
Yeah, and then, well, human.
Then
zombie for after he, when he gets to the future. And I looked around for some prestige classes to kind of take him in a different direction. I thought the Pathfinder Chronicler was neat, because it gives him sort of some bardic knowledge type abilities, and the ability to sort of... It has an ability...
Weave a yarn, so to speak.
Yeah, an epic tale is an ability that he would get from Pathfinder Chronicler. It got a little bit too magical as it went past, like, 5th level, so I was...
He's about as magical as my shoes.
Yeah, so that's another reason I wanted to prestige class him with Rangers, because I didn't want him to get to the point of having spells as a Ranger.
Right.
But there actually, flipping through things, I'd found this one... that was just sort of very much like Jonah Hex. It was called Master of Pain. And what you got was you were sort of immune to pain, and you could do some, like, exercises. You got this ability at the...
Pain don't hurt.
Yeah, and it seems sort of, Jonah Hex-y. He's immune to pain, and, he can, like, make other people hurt when they hurt him, which kind of gets into a little bit of where they went with him in the movie. It's Pathfinder. Pathfinder's a Dungeons and Dragons, it's a fantasy setting, so it's going into that sort of, everything's got a little bit of magical, sort of like, there's a feat that called masochism in one of the books, where if you cause pain to other people, you get a bonus to attack, and some of that kind of stuff was worked into it. I kind of like the idea, and expressly for the fact that the first level ability of Master of Pain was you were able to do these... like an hour-long ritual at the beginning of the morning to give yourself a bonus to your strength or dexterity, or you could boost up any one of your stats by going through like a sort of a what's it called, a castigation in the morning. But it just the pain reference really was what sold me on the idea of it being a decent idea. Another thing, I also looked at a couple of feats. Stuff like deadly aim and quick draw and that kind of thing seem just right up the alley of Jonah Hex.
And once again, it depends. Well, I mean, I don't think I know if I said it, but it would depend on who's writing them, because some people like to take the physical aspects a little bit more than what they are. It's one of those comics that that they really like to take, like, way deep into, like, into the the psychological and stuff like that.
There is a lot of introspection on Jonah Hex.
Yeah,
I've read a couple of books of Jonah Hex. Like, there's a particular one that always comes to mind where he...
I like the characters with no inner monologue. That's always fun. They say it, and they thought it because they said it. Yeah.
I don't like they need a lot of thought bubbles to get Jonah Hex's character.
Well, thought bubbles are fine. Talk bubbles. Gotcha. Bubbles, no. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. Any comments, sir, Ethan?
No, it sounds good. I'd plug him into Deadlands and be done with it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's kind of what I was
in Deadlands, he's done. Better than the Old West. We're done.
Built for Jonah Hex, almost. Yeah. I've been looking through Pathfinder recently, so it was sort of an exercise on my part to see how he would fit into the Pathfinder stuff.
Yeah,
interesting.
So you didn't see Jonah Hex?
I don't know a heck of a lot about him. So
I haven't seen him yet.
He's an interesting character.
Unfair for me really tackle him. But make some Western badass. And
yeah,
sounds
I mean,
like
really, he
me,
is
so,
just
yeah.
basically a cowboy.
Yeah,
he doesn't really have much more to him
so,
than that.
You know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he, you know, he's unfortunately not part of like the DC Trinity. Mm-hmm. So I mean, he doesn't get the.
He's very odd.
Yeah.
DC character.
There, for a while, so. He's on the Vertigo imprint.
Well, he's their cowboy.
Yeah, I can see why.
You know, I mean, and he's their cowboy that actually has played Bell, like the Two Gun Kid and Scalp Hunter, were the other two major cowboy titles at the time, and those don't play so well these days. Whereas Jonah Hex, you know, the cowboy who goes to the future. Well, you know, they can keep doing that, and they can keep putting him into stuff, and
yeah.
and everybody loves a cowboy. You know, well, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people love cowboys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
You done? All right.
Oh, one
God
point.
God damn it. We
one
almost
warning.
Got away from this.
I had to make a decision with the ranger, and the Pathfinder conveniently gave you the option to not do an animal companion. And that was actually a decision that was steering me away from
not
ranger.
Do an animal companion?
He doesn't, because he doesn't at any point have a, like,
yeah,
have a trigger or...
He's got a horse and a dog.
Well, yeah.
That's something that is actually, they did right in the movie.
I reading about him, I never heard a thing about it, and
he's
I've
got,
never seen the horse or a dog.
He's got both.
And he didn't take him to the future.
He didn't elect to go to the future, though, you know?
Right.
He didn't get a pack.
Through a large amount of the storyline, he doesn't have these animals tied to him. I'm sure he has them every
he
once
does.
In a while.
No,
but
it's a large part of the story. I mean, it's like, you know, you read about... you read about Batman, and it doesn't say a whole hell of a lot about his boots, but they're there.
Okay.
I mean,
well,
I'm wondering in the next Batman if they're going to have Batmite.
I hope so.
Come on, man.
Come on.
Shit.
They might as well. I mean,
like I said, I want them to just destroy that movie.
Next Superman?
Mixie-Split?
Super Horse, motherfucker.
Oh, Comet.
Super Horse?
How could I have forgotten Comet?
Super Horse, the Super
And
horse.
Streaky.
I don't know if I don't think I've ever heard of either of those
and
fucking
Beppo.
Things. I bet I'm better
and
off
if they
for
do,
it.
They're redoing Spider-Man. I want the Spider Buggy.
Spider Buggy.
Oh yeah.
I think
the Spotlight Belt, motherfucker.
Spotlight Belt. What right. happened to the Spotlight Belt? I mean, that was such an important and vital. I'm sorry.
So
what were
we
talking
about?
Next? Yeah.
Nothing. Anything else? Actually, what we're just fucking play the thing and we'll talk about it. And we're back. We just did a little characterization of Jonah Hex. I almost fell asleep. Next thing, what we're going to do is on issue number 10, we unveiled a fun little segment, or I don't know if it's a segment, yeah. But basically, what it is, it's the Red Phone Zone Awards. Where what we do is we find a well, at this point, it's an actor or an actress. I guess other people would fall into contendership. But that we really like a lot. But it's more so than that.
You think, like, Madonna could get on this list somehow?
Well, Madonna's an actress. I mean, she would never fucking get on there, but she is eligible.
Okay.
You know, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger's eligible for an Oscar, but he's never going to fucking win one. You know, so... But, yeah.
I think he deserved it for Conan.
What I'm saying is, like, you know, Stan Lee... could very easily be
okay.
a fucking member of Zona Ruthos, but he's not, you know, and just because he hasn't been there.
He does qualify. He does meet the basic requirements.
But who are the nominees?
Well that's
year
what I'm getting into.
On this next one.
What we did is on issue number 10, well, there's always been Christopher Lee, because he was the impetus of this.
Well, he was the
impetus
sir,
for
he
this.
The
first, fucking Lee.
The beginning.
He was the beginning.
List, yeah.
And while he was, you know, we technically announced it on that issue, he had been... So 10 years prior,
we've mentioned the
yeah.
Untitled.
It's been
Sir Christopher fucking Lee.
I mean, it has been for 10 years. It only we we put a gold star on him and called it good at that point. But we actually inducted Bruce fucking Campbell. Basically, what we're looking for is
indomitable.
For lack of a better word, just people that kick. Fucking ass, but it's more so than kick ass, because there's lots of people that kick ass that just probably wouldn't really make it to the list. I mean, they just kind of have to have a certain something that that really makes them stand out in our mind above, you know, your average actor or superhero or well, superstar kind of thing. And so what we did was we decided to try to make this a democratic process and threw out four nominees. Those nominees were Clint Eastwood, Morgan Freeman, Samuel L. Jackson, and Betty White. And we've had them up on the site for a while now.
Since issue 10.
Has it been? No, I don't think it's been
not
since issue
10.
The site hasn't even
been
up since issue 10.
Right. It was like
12,
it's been up for a little while now.
But it's been up for a while. And I think last time I checked, which was yesterday, we had six votes, and Clint Eastwood was in the lead with 60% of the vote. And then we had, following up him was Morgan Freeman, who had, I don't remember, less. And then less than that was Betty White. She had like 18 or 16% of the vote or something like that. And then Samuel L. Jackson at this point has none of the vote. So what we're doing is we are going to be unveiling the next member of the Order of Ruthaws on the next issue. And the three of us have our own personal choices for who we'd like to see to take it. And so we're just going to talk about who and why. And I'd like to open it up to either of these guys. I don't want to go first. I always go first.
All right, I'll go first.
Okay.
My choice is Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood, of course, he, born in 1930. He is a probably the quintessential masculine actor and character of our day. And I think one part of the Indomitable Order of, you know, the facilitators of the Indomitable Order of Ruthaws here.
Zona Ruthaws.
Sure. Part of that is a trend that we have in them is the iconic characters that these guys play. I mean,
sure.
With Christopher Lee, of course, you had Dracula and Count Dooku, Francisco Scaramanga and Saruman, and Bruce fucking Campbell, of course, had Ash, Italicus, Briscoe County Jr. Well, Clint Eastwood is Harry Callahan.
Fuck yeah.
Fucking Dirty Harry.
Dirty Harry, motherfucker.
Yeah. Not only that, I mean, he's the fucking man with no name.
Yeah.
That's the one where he's wearing the serape or whatever.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he goes all the way back to him being Rowdy Yates in Rawhide. You know, I mean, that was his first big break, and then after that, he went on to do Man with No Name films.
And like I don't know when I talked about it at one point on one of these shows. He does have his own little, you know, his own toe in the pool of geekdom, and that he was actually cast as a Two-Face on the Adam West Batman TV series.
Didn't quite.
And then it got canceled.
Then it got canceled. So, I mean, that would have been an interesting take on it.
Thing is, with The Man with No Name, I mean, Clint Eastwood cemented himself sort of as this masculine, just god character, you know?
I'd do him.
Well, any time you think of a Western nowadays in this day and age, is you think,
well, it's like
Clint Eastwood,
like it's in fucking Back to the Future. You know, when he winds up in
the time, I'm
Clint Eastwood. Yeah,
he's what you think of. Yeah. You know, and the last time he was in a Western was, you know, 18 years ago.
And at least, you know, I mean,
but you still think of him as a Western.
He's done so much iconic stuff.
But
with
at the same time,
I thought of him as an astronaut.
At any rate, God damn, you haven't seen a movie in a while. But
this press pass thing is
really fucked with my head by saying that. How long ago did that movie come out?
Which one?
The fucking Space Cowboys.
10 years. Came out in 2000.
Jesus Christ!
I don't think I've seen a Clint Eastwood movie since then. Actually,
Jesus, god damn.
Go
shit.
Watch Gran Torino. Be done.
Yeah.
You know, he does it. He has his own bad movies that he's been in.
Sure.
You know, Space Cowboys was terrible, I thought. But he was in the sequel. He had an uncredited role in the sequel of The Creature from the Black Lagoon, mm-hmm. Revenge of the Creature. It was released it was filmed months after the first release, and he had an uncredited role. This was back in 1954. And he didn't get a big break until
Rawhide.
Yeah, well, Rawhide was in 63.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that wasn't his big break. He was in the business for nine years.
Wasn't he a stuntman for a while?
No.
And a carpenter or something like that.
He worked at a gas station.
I meant his first toe in the business. I don't. It was something arbitrary like that, I thought.
No, he worked at a gas station, and a producer saw him and basically got him into an agent. got him an agency, and he did terrible work. Yeah. And it, people,
well, like
people said
Lee.
He was very wooden. He was very didn't know what he was doing. He didn't know acting. So
his presence was so phenomenal that people
thought of him more as he built on his looks.
Yeah.
Oh.
I found it interesting in 1950, he was drafted into the U.S. Army during the Korean War. He was stationed at Fort Ord, where his certificate as a lifeguard got him appointed as a life-saving and swimming instructor. Mm-hmm. He safeguarded film and television actors who had joined the Army through the Special Services Program, including John Saxon, David Jansen, and Martin Milner. In 1951, while on leave, he rode in a Douglas 80 bomber that ran out of gas, crashed in the ocean near Point Reyes, and after escaping the sinking fuselage, he and the pilot swam 3 miles to shore.
That's some badass motherfucking shit.
I mean,
really.
And that sort of embodies to me he's bad motherfucker. He is the bad motherfucker of bad motherfuckers.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like obviously the originator of this, Christopher fucking Lee. He was military intelligence during World War II, and he interrogated and presumably killed people.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And, I mean, that's obviously that kind of stuff doesn't really go away. It doesn't go away, and it's not like he's all like, I am Christopher Lee, and I've killed people. It just shows.
It changes. It gives you things that you
have. And I've said it before, Clint Eastwood is a guy that could be paralyzed in an iron lung, and he could sneer at me, and it pissed my pants being afraid of the guy.
And it sucks that he's fucking 80 now.
It means he'll die at some point, but I think death is afraid of him. So, sorry, Mr. Eastwood, I don't want to bother you, sir.
We'll come back later.
But
fuck Chuck Norris. Clint Eastwood would kick his ass.
Well, yeah. Of course. He's Clint Eastwood.
Wow.
But we should talk a little bit about Unforgiven. Unforgiven, one of the greatest movies of all time, came out at a point where westerns were thought dead. They were passé. They were. He comes out with this just phenomenal movie that he wins his first Academy Award for. He wins an Oscar, wins Best Picture, and since then people started basically going, "Well, we knew he could direct because he did Play Disney for Me, did all these others." But wow,
He was one of my top six favorite directors.
Yeah, he's really a Renaissance man in Hollywood. I mean, he does all the stuff. He composes.
Yeah. He wrote the music for Unforgiven. Yeah. He wrote the music for Gran Torino.
I mean,
he sang a song in the Gran Torino.
He's an incredibly talented guy.
Awesome.
And he's just an amazing, amazing director, writer. He's an environmental activist.
Yeah.
Was on the California State Park and Recreation Commission.
Yep.
Led a...
Mayor of Carmel, California.
Mayor of Carmel, California, yes.
He's the mayor of a town?
Was. He's no longer.
Yeah, was.
He was only for one term in the
80s. And he was all like, fuck this shit.
Yeah. Well, he still made 2 movies when he was mayor.
I know.
He led a opposition against Schwarzenegger's law to extend a turnpike basically through this preserved land to a 6-lane 16-mile toll road that would cut through the San Onofre State Beach north of San Diego, and he led a basically a panel of unanimous opposition against it, and he was later. Him, Schwarzenegger's brother-in-law, Bobby Shriver, and others, they were not reappointed to the commission.
Because they shut it down.
So he kicked Arnold Schwarzenegger's ass.
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, if anyone could do it, I mean, yes, Arnie, you have a lot of your muscle, but Clint Eastwood kick your ass any day.
Scary man.
He's
also a very sensitive actor.
He has honorary degrees from the University of the Pacific,
awesome.
The University of Southern California.
Honorary.
He's received the Thalberg Award. I mean, he has quite possibly been on the as a member of the Order of Ruth. As I think he would bring prestige and honor to the society.
Oh, dude,
I agree too.
That is why
I love me some Clint.
The man's got 69 acting credits to his name, 35 directing credits, and 6 composing credits. So I mean, the guy's just an amazing talented person.
Yeah, a movie I really liked of his, and it isn't anything that's like, I mean, it's certainly not it's not fucking Unforgiven or Gran Torino, but I still liked it a lot. Was In the Line of Fire.
That's a great movie.
That was a really good movie.
But really, with like characters like Dirty Harry, set the mold. You think like, good Maverick cops like Riggs and John McClane. Those guys wouldn't have been there if freaking Harry Callahan hadn't been out there kicking some ass.
And Harry Callahan could kick all their asses.
Probably.
And that movie came out
in 71.
How long ago was it that they made the Dirty Harry game that he fucking voiced Dirty Harry 5 years ago?
And he's still a terrifying man.
Yeah.
I mean, Dirty Harry
I'm sad
is,
that he's retired from acting.
Yeah.
But I hope it's like his old retirement from acting when he said when he retired in I think it was 86 and he turned around and did, you know, a whole bunch more movies. Mm-hmm. But he broke out that he said I'm not retired when he ran into Unforgiven. And, you know, hopefully we'll get some more.
So, yeah, you know, I think he said he's most, the quote I saw basically said he is most likely not going to do anything else ever again.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that never say never.
Yeah.
He's probably not going to act, but if something comes along that's
but he's
just
still,
like,
but
awesome,
he's still going to direct.
Yeah, oh yeah, well, he's still
he says, like, he's got a ton of ideas for movies.
Yeah.
That's another reason not to be acting is because you're busy doing something
else. And he strikes me as a guy who's going to be working until he dies.
I hope so, and I hope it's a long time. What did I hear he was... Oh, it was a movie about J. Edgar Hoover starring Leonardo DiCaprio as J. Edgar Hoover. I mean, by Clint Eastwood, I'm sold. That just sounds awesome to me.
I mean, and he's managed to take himself beyond the point of saying, oh, well, he's an actor, he's Dirty Harry, he's a badass.
He's an icon.
No, now you go, well, he's also directed these kick-ass movies, you know, that he's
not in, Academy Award winner.
Goddamn,
I mean,
you know?
As far as the... Okay, I know that it isn't... I mean, the Academy isn't the end-all, be-all, but, you know, as far as the Academy, his peers, other directors and stuff, they think that he is... I know this is a controversial way of putting it, but he's a better director than, like, Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. Or as good of a director as Spielberg. Spielberg's only got two Oscars.
Well, I put him on par with, you know, like Howard Hawks.
Oh, fuck yeah.
You know, John Ford, you know.
John Ford was an amazing director, but... Yeah, I mean, he's that kind of actor. I mean, he's a no-bullshit, no-nonsense kind of actor. I don't remember. I mean, it might have been the special edition Unforgiven. They're showing a cut scene, and like when it came, they were shooting the scene, and he, you know, where the point comes where they say, you know, cut. He's like, okay, knock that shit off, get over here. It was just, you know, he's just like a cool. You're right, Renaissance man. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, I really enjoy Clint Eastwood a lot.
That is why I choose him above the others.
I would not hurt my feelings in the least if Clint Eastwood was the next nominee. So do you want to hit Betty White or
sure?
Okay.
I am promoting the cause for Betty White, and to a certain extent, I know her pretty much as Rose Nyland from the Golden Girls.
Which is funny.
I watched it when I was young.
Right. No. I'm not saying that you're wrong, or that wasn't like a derogatory statement. It's funny that 30-year-olds like us and remember her from that when she was actually. Typecast up until that point as a more of like the Blanche kind of character, like the sexy, slutty kind of character.
Actually, in looking things up, I found out that the director of Golden Girls offered Blanche's part to Betty White and Rose to Rue McClanahan originally, but in one of those like Hollywood sort of back scene storylines, they were like, well, let's do it
the other way around. I've done that before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she was kind of hesitant at first, but she found the role and really did an amazing thing. One of the reasons that I am a big supporter of Betty White, being an X-Men member of the Order of Orthez, because she's acted so much range. You know, I would hazard to say maybe more of a range than Clint Eastwood, though I'm not as big of a fan of Clint Eastwood. That's one of the reasons I'm not such a big booster of Clint Eastwood is I don't know that much about him. I saw him in Space Cowboys and
See, the thing
Dirty
about
Harry and,
the thing
and
about Betty White is she's primarily a television actress.
She did do films.
I understand that, but I'm more of a movie person than a television person.
And I can definitely understand that. I mean, her biggest like movie performance or her film performance recently was Lake Placid.
Yeah, and that was when she was saying motherfucker all the time.
Yeah, she
cocksucker.
She was a villain, so to speak, and Lake Placid.
Villain's a strong term.
Well, she's
for
the
it.
One who raised the crocodile.
Yeah.
You know, and then
she
also,
wasn't the fucking crocodile.
Yeah, she's now.
Which would have been a different take.
She was the crocodile.
Blah ha ha. She's also going to be in a movie called You Again with Kristen Bell.
Yeah.
She's coming out here not too long.
Oh.
What she's actually her title that she actually has in Hollywood apparently is First Lady of Game Shows. I wasn't sure if you guys were aware of that.
Yeah.
She apparently married a man by the name of Alan Ludlum, big game show producer, and she's appeared on countless game
shows.
Yeah,
and that Leonardo guy can paint ceilings.
And that was actually the first. It was actually her first. It wasn't her first Emmy, but she was the first woman to win an Emmy as a game show host. As Just Men in 1983, Her other, she's won six Emmys. I didn't write down exactly what they were all for.
They're probably for Maude and Golden Girls.
Rose. She won two for Rose Nyland. She won one for Just Men, which was the game show.
Right.
She won another one for Life with Elizabeth.
Right.
Life with Elizabeth was an example of something that she's done. Her early career was she was working with a group called Hollywood on Television.
Mm-hmm.
Was a sort of a talk show kind of thing, and she ended up taking.
It's kind of like the Red Phone Zone, only with like
more like Carol Burnett.
No, I mean they just talked Hollywood and insider Hollywood stuff.
But they also did skits.
Right.
They did like full on like skits, and a lot of characters that ended up showing up in the actual television shows were originally created on a Hollywood on Television. Skit like Elizabeth, the Life of Elizabeth, where she won her first Emmy. Her first Emmy was from was a skit on Hollywood on Television that turned into its own TV show that she won her first Emmy on.
Mm-hmm.
She went on to, like I said, Sue Ann Nivens from Mary Tyler Moore Show, where she was her typical cast, and then Rose Nyland, which was the complete inverse of cast of what you would normally have Betty White do. And since Golden Girls, she's appeared on.
How old is she?
Oh, she's. I didn't write it down.
Mid-80s, probably?
Yeah, I would say.
Okay.
Well, I mean, she got her start in.
What year? Does it say what year she was born?
It did, but I didn't write it down. Her first acting credit was at the Bliss Hayden Little Theater, so it was actual stage theater, but she had to quit because World War II started, and she had joined the Women's Service Auxiliary. Or
so she was an adult during World War II, so she's in, at least in her mid-80s.
Yeah.
I just don't have a clue how old she is. I mean, I know... Yeah.
She's still alive, that's what... Yeah.
She's younger than Christopher Lee, I remember that, and he's 88.
Yeah, so she's probably like 84, 86.
Something like that. Okay.
But since the end of Golden Girls, she's been on dozens of little shows, including Ellen Field, The Ellen DeGeneres Show, My Wife and Kids, That 70s Show. She's won Emmy nominations for Suddenly Susan, for appearing as a guest star on Suddenly Susan, Yes, Dear, and The Practice. The Practice is an interesting case where, again, she made a character, Catherine Piper, on The Practice, and now Catherine Piper is appearing on other shows that are in that sort of vein. Like, she's doing, like, crossover sort of soap operatic moves where she's taking the Catherine Piper character from The Practice to Boston Legal, where it's sort of stringing these shows together like she did in Golden Girls, where she would appear on Empty Nest and Nurses. And one of the things that a lot of people wouldn't...
Nurses was that... What was that show that was like the awful fucking spinoff of Golden Girls? Was that Nurses?
I don't think it was Nurses.
It had all of them except for Betty... B. Arthur.
It had everybody but B. Arthur.
Still
that was actually Golden Girls. It was like Golden Girls Extra or something like that.
It was like... But they all three worked in a hospital. Or they... I don't remember the name of the show, but all three of them worked in a hospital. It was Sophia and Blanche and...
Yeah, it was the Golden Girls, but they'd moved somewhere.
But it was a different show.
But it was the same character.
Right.
It was called the Golden Girls.
No, it wasn't.
It was called the Golden Girls plus something else.
Whatever. Okay.
Anyway, one of the things that I was getting was that, what I was about to get to here is one of the reasons Betty White is such a phenomenal person is that she has basically been in charge of her own career, like, from the get-go. She's been the producer, the host, the writer. She's been in charge of how things happen. She's been the leading force as opposed to just an actor or an actress in the production. She's actually been in charge of how things went and made decisions about how these things went, up to and including her 3-year stint on The Bold and the Beautiful. She just kind of went over to Bold and Beautiful and was like, I'm going to play this character, and it's going to go this way, and this is how it's going to happen, and let's get it done. And, you know, that's Betty White is this real commanding, take charge, get shit done chick who is really capable, pretty much, who's proven with Rose that she's really capable of really going pretty much anywhere as an actress. And she may stick to for the most part to this real sassy, crass, mean person, but she's more than proven that she can be another play around, you know. I think that kind of covers it.
Do you have anything to say?
She says cocksucker.
She does say cocksucker. Yeah. There was actually a Carson show miniseries, or a little bit where she would...
It was
Johnny Carson show where it was make...
Was it Johnny Carson? Letterman or Leno?
It was on one of the... It was on one of late night shows where it was make Betty White flinch.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where it was Conan.
Was that Conan O'Brien?
I believe it was. It seems like it.
Yeah. And just one of the, another one of those things where she's just making stuff. She did a... you heard of the show Ugly Betty?
Yep.
She did a Ugly Betty White spinoff. Where she played.
She was on Betty, or she was on Ugly Betty, and I think she got a Golden Globe nomination for a guest spot or some shit like that. I don't remember.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much what I've been able to find out about her. Just a phenomenal individual and an amazing force in the, you know, in the industry.
Everything you're telling me, I wasn't aware of, and it's cool. But I've always viewed Betty White with a, she has had. Through three tiers in her acting career. She played like that seductress, sassy kind of bitch like she did
Femme Fatale
on the Mary Tyler Moore show. And then after she moved on from there, she played like the dim-witted idiot like Rose on Golden Girls. And since then, she's kind of played Betty White in a sense of she's just kind of like this presence that's on, you know, like when she was on Saturday Night Live, or
which was actually a
or like the whole thing, right, yeah, and you know, I mean, that's cool that she's done all those things. I wasn't aware of them at all, but I knew that she was on Mary Tyler Moore. It seemed like she was on Maude. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yes,
she seemed like she was on Maude because I thought that was kind of like how they got the idea for her for the Golden Girls because it would have been. Betty White. I mean, goddammit. B. Arthur. Ethan's got naked pictures of her. And he's all like, yummy.
That's right, baby.
So, yeah. Okay, so I guess they've made their cases. My choice for the Zona Ruthaz, for the next nominee, it's the guy that Ethan's nominee, Clint Eastwood, has called the greatest actor in the world, Morgan Freeman, and at least he's not Betty White. I decided to take a different approach to this than these two guys.
And he finally has a fucking Oscar.
About
fucking time.
It really is about time. It
was a really nice... I remember
Cuba
that...
Cuba Gooding Jr.
I remember that shit with when he won the Oscar. It was a very short and sweet, and gee, thanks... And walked off the stage.
Whereas we both wanted him to say, it's about fucking time.
And throwing it at, who, Tobey Maguire? Who were we saying you would throw it at? We had like this ongoing, it was a fucking Elijah Wood.
Yeah.
You would throw it at Elijah Wood. Because he's always like, our movie, because it was in the middle of the Lord of the Rings thing. It was fucking annoying. We're always like, yeah, thanks, and throws it at Elijah Wood. It was like, yeah. I took a different approach to this to Ethan and Shay. I actually wrote up like a presentation, like it looks like the both of us did, and then I just kind of looked at it and I deleted it because I was, you know, I don't want to do it that way. I don't want to do a bullet pointed thing. I mean, Morgan Freeman has done some awful fucking movies.
Like what?
Like that's
Chain Reaction,
the Dreamcatchers.
I like Dreamcatcher.
I did not, and I especially didn't like him.
That's a murder mystery, isn't it?
No, it was the Stephen King thing with the shit aliens weasels. Or the he was a helicopter general. Yeah,
shit weasels.
But at the same time, he's like
Outbreak.
He's an actor that
he's been in everything.
He's been in. I mean, he has been in everything. Obviously, I loved him in Batman, the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. He was fantastic in those. Like Ethan yelled, he finally won a fucking Oscar under Clint Eastwood for Million Dollar Baby. A fantastic performance.
Not his best performance, but
it was up there. He was in Lucky Number 11. It was a very good.
That was
good.
Pretty neat.
I entirely think he should have got one for
Unforgiven.
Unforgiven was
fuck that. He should have got one. Well, you know what? He should have got one.
Not really.
He's a shoe-in at some point for a lifetime achievement.
I agree.
I say.
I actually kind of expected him to win this year for Invictus, but I almost wonder if like the Clint Eastwood circle jerk that's been going on for a while kind of worked against him.
Might have
been, yeah. And you know that's too bad because you know he was really good in that, and you know it was it's a really cliche way of putting it, but it's like the role he was born to play, and goddamn, was he was a really good Nelson Mandela. I don't remember the year. I wrote it down. I believe it was early 60s. He got his first Oscar nomination for
I can't
Mean Streets.
Anybody I'd rather see as Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, I mean, he's perfect. He was that. I thought he was just fucking fantastic, and like he said, as Red in The Shawshank Redemption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the biggest fucking snubs in Oscar history.
I can't believe
was
that.
Him not getting a nomination for Driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah.
That was fucked up. I mean, that's just not, that should not have, first off, he should have won. He should have won for Driving Miss Daisy.
What was he up against?
I don't even remember. It was a bunch
of shit.
Didn't
even get a
nomination. No, he did not even get a nomination.
That's up there with Al Pacino not getting a nomination for
Godfather.
Godfather.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's just like one of those, like when people talk about bullshit, yeah, like when people speak ill of the Oscars, I'm not
this
one of those people.
Why.
That's one of those, they didn't fucking nominate Morgan Freeman for you know, Driving Miss Daisy, and you're like, okay, you got a good point. But
yeah.
Morgan Freeman's so fucking cool that his name is trademarked. I mean, Morgan Freeman is a trademarked thing that you are not allowed to use. He runs personally and moderates.
I'm very much against that concept.
Moderates fucking. Runs and moderates MorganFreeman.com. Because somebody ran MorganFreeman.com and put a bunch of things on there, and it led to a Kill Whitey website.
It turned into like a racist.
That's
website.
Why he did it. No, it wasn't his. Somebody did that. That's
right.
Why he trademarked his name.
That's
motherfucker.
I mean, but what I'm saying is that trademark. I mean, your name is effectively already trademarked as long as you're intending it to be the individual.
So that did happen.
Legal loophole that I don't agree with. But
well,
anyway,
he had every right to do
reason.
It. I remember that one of the things first off, the man's a. In a lot of ways, he's a class act. In a lot of ways, he's a dirty old fucker. And we'll get to that in a little bit, too. One of the ways that I think he's a class act is he's been, you know, he's like just like this picture of prestige and, you know, honor and, you know, dignity.
Humility.
Humility. And, like, they always want him to
just
do
looking at him,
yeah.
You just get this feeling of being humble, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
like,
but that's what he is.
Everything's going to be okay now. Mother
and he
Freeman's
goes
here.
To,
yeah.
And he's been asked every year, I believe it was since, I don't remember what year, but they literally ask him every single year to host the Black History Month, and he refuses to do it.
Why?
Because he says that the only way the racism is ever going to end is when people stop recognizing
it.
He says Black History Month. He says Black History Month should not happen. He says there isn't a White History Month, and everybody would freak out if there was one.
I really admire him for saying that.
I do too.
Totally.
You know, I mean, I can say it, and I sound like a fucking cracker ass motherfucking racist dickhead.
White History Month.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, but. And, you know, whatever. I mean, I haven't been through the same plights as them, but at the same time, Morgan Freeman saying it, you know, like this guy that I have a lot of respect for.
Tyler's watching.
Is he? Fuck you, Tyler.
Hi, Tyler.
I love you, Tyler. We're just talking about you.
Yeah.
We love Morgan Freeman a lot.
What do you have to say about Morgan Freeman, Tyler?
Shut up, Tyler. This is my show, not yours. Morgan Freeman. He had that. He was on an interview with... some retard. Who was
some
it? One of those, like, it was like Katie Couric or somebody dumb like that.
And
they said, and they asked a question, and the question was, you know, blah, 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 for a black man. And he says, and he said, well, I'm not going to ask you, blah, 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 for a white woman. So why don't we leave off that part and we'll just talk about things as human
people.
Beings. And I just, you know, to me, it's just, you know, it's such a relief and it's a breath of fresh air that not only is somebody that's not a white person saying, God, I'm sounding so racist, but it's nice to hear
a
person who's not a white person saying this, but it's also even fucking cooler for it to be a man that's in his 70s. I mean, that's like, you know, that's like...
He's actually had to face some real racism.
Yeah. You know, me, you know...
And segregation.
You know, I am in a, you know, I mean... I am about as far away from any kind of, you know, being racially discriminated against as possible. You know, but Morgan Freeman, I mean, he
grew up with it.
He marched with fucking was it King? No, it was Malcolm X. I mean, the dude's got a fucking history. I just think he's a phenomenal actor. I mean, I pretty much walked around with a constant scowl on my face from like 1989 until. Was it 2006 when he won his Oscar? Because he didn't have an Oscar. I mean, he's just like one of like those wrongs that had to be righted. And I think that he is like the perfect choice for the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthos. I think that we have down and dirty, gritty, killing motherfuckers with Christopher Lee. And I think we kind of have the lighthearted taken care of with
the occult master.
The occult master. We have the lighthearted fanboyish taken care of with Bruce Campbell. And I think it'd be a fun way to round out the triumvirate that we have going on right now with a distinguished man, with a wonderful humanitarian, with like this man that just oozes integrity with Morgan Freeman, which is why I think that he should be the next Order of the Zone of Ruthos. Thoughts, particulars, disagrees.
I would not be disappointed if he was inducted. So,
me neither.
Frankly, I do.
I
believe Clint Eastwood is a shoe-in later at the very least.
Yeah.
Is Morgan Freeman. They will be in there at some point.
Yeah, if we have to pull executive decisions and be like, fuck Betty White, Clint Eastwood, or like whatever. Well, not fuck Betty. Fuck. Nicolas Cage.
I wouldn't put Nicolas Cage.
No, I wouldn't. I like Nicolas Cage plenty.
Most of the time.
Some of the time, for me. But yeah. I enjoy it. I'd like to see him on there. I love Morgan Freeman. Enough said.
From the wet dungeon walls. Hey, the crowd chased another one in.
Welcome, come in, make yourself comfortable.
What is this place?
Don't worry, you found a Gamer's Haven.
The Gamer's Haven Podcast at gamershavenpodcast.com.
Hi, people. Red Phone Zone, issue 19. We are back. I just now realized that we are running at 2 hours right now. But hey, we learned that's what happens when we stick a fourth person into the mix. It's been a fun show. I got to talk about Pixar. We did our damnedest to sell you guys on the Indomitable Order, the Zone of Ruthos, for our next winner, and they're going to be unveiled next week. We are going to stop the voting this coming
Friday,
so you only have 2 more days to vote. So go to theredphonezone.com and vote for who you'd like to see win this award. We'll unveil it next week. What we've decided is, what with CantCon blooming and everything, and because it's actually something that I want to do, is we're not going to have any, we're not going to really have any segments next show. We're going to unveil the Order of Ruthos winner, and we're just going to kind of bullshit a little bit for an hour or so. And we're going to talk.
However long it really goes.
However long it takes. But we're going to be talking about things. We're not going to be like, I like stuff. But we're going to be, there's going to be a little bit of format to it, in so much as we're just kind of talk about, where our specialities in geekdom lie. If you guys haven't figured out in 20 episodes, then we're going to nail it down for you. It'll be fun. It'll be kind of free.
So like where we come from, basically.
From geek-wise. I mean,
sounds good.
It was a long time ago. But
galaxy far, far away?
No. And there I was. Yeah. Yeah, so,
slowly I turned.
Inch by inch. Pixar rocks my socks. I would totally go check out Toy Story 3 if I were you. I am going to go check it out if I am me, because I've already seen it. I'm going to see it again. Take my niece and my nephew and Chloe and anybody else. Any other small children I can catch in my net, and go see the Toy Story 3 again, because it's a really good movie, and I think kids should see it, but I think all adults should see it as well. I cannot say how much I enjoyed it as well. Do you guys have anything else to say?
No. Jonah Hex was a classic cowboy.
Today's the last day you can pre-register for CantCon.
Today's the last day you can pre-register for CantCon.
Yeah, you got 2 hours, or you're fucked if you're on the West Coast,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you gotta do it. Do it now.
No, it's
do
East Coast. It's an hour forward, isn't it?
I know you're watching. Do it now.
Shut up, Shay.
They're not gonna listen to you. Technically, you'll probably go down at about 7 or 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. But,
but you're gonna cut it off at fucking midnight, because that's the kind of cross the T's and dot the I's kind of guy that you are.
Exactly.
But yeah, do go to iTunes and download us, check us out there, rate and review us. We'd like to hear what you have to say. Obviously
comment on the posts on the website.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, I'd like to
you
see
can,
that.
You can register on the website and then leave.
I was watching the Bagged and Boardcast last week, and they were telling me that they had been watching and they like what they've seen so far, and they didn't tell me like on the show or anything. It was like. They do segues same as we do, only they don't record them. And so this was on a non-recorded live thing, and they told me that they like it, and that your casting always sucks.
Oh yes,
and mine is always the best, and I'm not making shit up. They told me this, and I don't even agree with that. I mean, yours sucks.
No, mine is always the worst. They got that right.
Yeah, they got that, and it's really a toss-up. It's pretty much whichever. If it's something that Ethan knows better, he usually nails it. If it's something I know better, he usually nails it.
What was that writer's name that I really liked that I couldn't remember?
Woody Allen?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's why I'm so bad at this stuff. Like,
Woody Allen? Why are we talking about Woody Allen?
I don't know.
Shut the fuck up.
I hate Woody Allen. All right.
Wow. Woody Allen he's so polarizing.
So, next show.
Yeah, next show we're going to just be talking about
induction
bullshit.
Induction of the facilitator of the order, indomitable order of the Zone of Ruth Isles.
I can't wait. I'm going to be making up some certificates.
Some Red Phone Zone chat.
So, I guess, this is Aaron, Ethan, and Shay signing off. I'll kill you to death. I'll let your geek flag fly.
Or something.
Yeah. Some shit like that.
You'll let...